American, I still should be free to speak out and criticize these things without consequence. But is that what it is, to keep people like me and not speaking out because we'd be afraid that we'll be tortured or something?
Hasn't it ever crossed your mind that you could disappear?
It has, but that's why I jokingly tell people at the horn, you know, hey, if I'm sent to Guantanamo Bay, please lead a protest. If I don't appear on the air one day, look, come find me. Come find me.
I know it seems outrageous, and there's no lie that is more easy to sell than an outrageous one, because of the fact that people say, that's outrageous, that couldn't happen here. That couldn't happen here. Mark, it can happen here.
Well, we know already that American citizen Jose Padilla was taken at Chicago Airport and held in jail for many years without trial. And in fact, just recently, I talked about the case of Mr. I think it's Al... What's his name? The German citizen who was taken... Khaled El Masri, who was taken to Afghanistan and tortured, he'd done absolutely nothing wrong. He was kept in this tiny filthy cell and shackled and drugged and beaten and interrogated, and the worst part is when he sues, and the Supreme Court says sorry. Yeah, that's just the way America is. We randomly pick up people and torture them. Oops. No one is ever held accountable for that. It makes it clear that we are becoming the Soviet Union. And it is very scary.
It's Stalin's Russia right now.
It's very scary. And I don't know how Americans, it's one of the reasons why I have Republicans on my shows, because I can't understand how they can deal with it. I mean, how did they put that in their heads? I'm going to have another one on soon, just so I can ask him that question.
Yeah.
How can you possibly justify not even hearing the case? I mean, the Supreme Court said, if the government says it's a state secret, then all right. So we tortured a few people and killed a few people and beaten a few people. And, oh, well, that's what governments do.
Mark, what about the prison right in New York City that right now is housing I don't know how many Middle Eastern people who are probably innocent of any wrongdoing, who have not been allowed an attorney, who have been, yes, indeed, tortured, because some of them have gotten out and spoken about it. How about that?
I'll tell you what it is. If you are not an American citizen, I mean, and we talked about Jose Padilla precisely because he is an American citizen.
Largely
it's the exception. Generally, most of these vicious things that our government does are done to non-citizens. And I think that's one reason why the American people kind of let it happen and don't talk about it very much, because they think, I'm a citizen. What's that?
Come on, people, wake up.
I'll tell you, the German government is not taking this lightly. They have indicted 13 people in the CIA. They will not be allowed to leave the United States or go to Europe, because they will be captured. And I hope they are, and I hope they're tried, and I hope they're sent, after a fair trial, sent to a German prison for life. And wouldn't that be a terrific?
One of them.
Yeah. Well,
he cannot go to Germany.
That's right.
And there's quite a few.
And isn't it sad that the same country that we taught Nuremberg laws to is now having to teach the same lesson to us? I mean, irony doesn't quite cut it. It's disgusting. It's shameful.
It's beyond irony. And I'll tell
it's
you something.
It's shameful.
This country has gone so far to the right. We are so totally morally bankrupt as a country right now. We are despised all over the world. I watched a documentary yesterday about Iraq that just broke my heart. And all this documentary showed was a day in the life of an Iraqi family.
Yeah.
What those people are living is unbelievable.
I know. I showed on my television show, it's still in my video archive, that you really should take a look at. It's Are We Creating More Terrorists Than We Kill was the name of the show, where I showed a YouTube from an Iraqi family. But
well,
one distinction I want to make with you, Jennifer.
Terrorist for a minute there.
I want to make one distinguishing thing, though, Jennifer. When you say that we are morally, one thing I want to say when you say we are morally bankrupt as a country, I have to say this. I think that there should always be a distinction made between the government of the United States and the American people, because I think we are coming out of this morass. I think that the American people are waking up. It's been slow, admittedly. It's been too slow, admittedly. I agree with all of that. But I do think there's a reason why George Bush's approval ratings in the toilet. There's a reason why we elected a Democratic Congress. There's a reason why hopefully we're going to elect a Democratic president in 2008, because the American people don't want to be known as the country that approves of torture. So I just want to make the distinction. I don't want to. I think maybe the bottom of my heart, I'm an optimist and I'm a patriotic American, and I consider Bush a cancer on this nation. But I think that the nation itself is still healthy enough to reject this, and maybe I'm just hopeful.
No, I think you're right. I think if you ask any individual in this country if they approve of it, they would say no, with few exceptions.
Right.
One
of the things I want to talk about.
People say, hell yes, I would do that.
And I want to thank you for your call, Jennifer, and I want to encourage you to call in again sometime. You were a terrific caller. In the last few minutes, though, I want to go over how the American people and the representatives responded to these early tortures by the Bush administration, and how the Bush administration used tortured logic to get around the law. All right? So here it is. Thanks for your call, though, Jennifer, and I hope you'll call
again
sometime.
Thank you, Mark.
So here it is. We've approved John Yoo's memo that says you can do all these awful things. And we did them, you know, hundreds of times on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. We now know that he told the interrogators virtually anything, exaggerated, false, it didn't matter. We now know, at least some of us know, that actually, as Dave put it, you know, patient, repeated questioning is better than harsh physical pressure. But what happened is a new guy came into the Office of Legal Counsel, Jack Goldsmith, who's now written a book on this that describes the details of. I mean, he's really the one probably who we should thank for these leaks. I don't know that I agree with Jennifer that they were planted by the administration. I don't know. But I do know that Jack Goldsmith got in a lot of hot water because he rejected the surveillance program. He rejected the torture memo. He rejected all of that, just like James Comey did. And the Justice Department, 6 months later, and this is, I think, again, reflecting the values of the American people who are watching this, said in a new legal opinion that got rid of John Hughes, the first sentence, quote, torture is abhorrent both to American law and values and to international norms. Footnote. And in the footnote, it said, that doesn't mean that anything the CIA has done has been illegal. In fact, everything they did in the past was perfectly legal. Talk about bearing the lead. Torture is abhorrent both to American law and values and to international norms. First sentence. Footnote. That doesn't mean we've ever done anything wrong. And indeed, the Justice Department then set out to fire those who were dissenting. One of the first was a guy by the name of Daniel Levin. Like my name, only without E on the end, L-E-V-I-N. Nice to know that my namesake also backed the dissents, also rejected torture, and found himself a new job. No, instead, they hired a guy named Bradbury. And Bradbury was put on a notice, really. He was a good old Federal Society guy. He was someone who seemed to want to do everything the Bush administration wanted to do, but they put him on probation and kept him on probation, did not tell him whether or not he would get the job until they made sure that he did everything the White House wanted him to do. It's a great way to take a watchdog agency like the Office of Legal Counsel and make sure they follow everything. Comey objected, and Bradbury did things like block career lawyers. Remember, this is supposed to be not a political position, but career lawyers, people like an Ivy League law professor that he made sure would not get in the way. He approved the combine techniques. You can freeze someone and deny them food and water while slapping them and drowning them. Comey, to his credit, said, this is from the New York Times, at one testy 2004 White House meeting, Comey said no lawyer would endorse John Yoo's justification for the surveillance program. Addington disagreed. Addington, of course, is Cheney's lawyer, the guy who has been behind all of these surveillance and torture memos. And Comey shot back, no good lawyer. So he was someone who was willing to stand up. But he left. This is, of course, the same question that I've always been asked with Colin Powell. You know, what do you do when you're in a corrupt administration and you see evil things happening? Do you try, as Powell did, to stay in there, not criticize it publicly, and work it from the inside, which turned out to be ineffective? Or do you do what Comey did, which is leave and criticize the administration, the more respectable thing, but he left. He wasn't there. And Bradbury was in charge of the Office of Legal Counsel. And so even when the United States Congress, under the influence of John McCain, in an overwhelming vote, 90 senators voted that we do uphold the Geneva Conventions, a vote that isn't even necessary because the Geneva Conventions are already American law. Even though the Convention Against Torture prohibits cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, here comes another secret memo by Bradbury. Nothing we've done is cruel, inhumane, or degrading. It's not cruel to slap someone in the head senseless. It's not inhumane to deny someone food and sleep. It's not degrading to put someone naked in a cell at freezing temperature until they're shivering. That's not degrading. It's perfectly normal stuff. Waterboarding. Simulated drowning. Not a problem. It was Bradbury who took the president's signing statement after that congressional law and made sure that it had no basis, that it had no meaning whatsoever. George Bush says we don't torture, but he defines none of the practices he's ever done as torture. And that, my friends, is not just torture. It's tortured logic. That's it for the Inside Scoop today. Tune in tomorrow. For now, there's a Bob Kincaid's prayer meeting coming up. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. The war in Afghanistan has reached crisis proportions as the Taliban gain in numbers in more than half the country, closing in on the capital city of Kabul. An independent think tank whose members live in country completed a new study. Results indicate that if NATO is to have any impact against an insurgency, troop numbers will have to be doubled to at least 80,000. Ending months of speculation, officials with the state of New Hampshire announcing that their presidential primary will be held on January 8th. Iowa's caucuses have led the way for several decades, but New Hampshire has had the initial primary for even longer, since 1920. The announcement comes directly after the state of Michigan's decision to hold their primary on January 15th. The 2008 Democratic presidential race is tightening, Barack Obama gaining on frontrunner Hillary Clinton 6 weeks before the first balloting. That's according to a Reuters Zogby poll released today. Airports and train stations across the U.S. were packed with travelers today. A record 39 million Americans were expected to travel at least 50 miles this Thanksgiving holiday. Thousands of displaced Iraqis have begun returning to their homes, according to the BBC. An estimated 1,000 Iraqis make it back home daily because of a drop in violence, improved security, and incentives from the Iraqi government. In Islamabad, Pakistan, sports hero Imran Khan and hundreds more political prisoners freed today as martial law eased throughout the country's capital city. President General Pervez Musharraf may leave his military post as soon as this weekend. That's according to a top official under pressure from President Bush. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown apologized to the public today for a security breach affecting an estimated 25 million people across the UK. Two computer disks lost in the largest breach of security of its kind in Europe. Disgraced American cyclist Floyd Landis making a final appeal to French arbitrators to clear his name, possibly to regain the 2006 Tour de France title. He's accused of testing positive for testosterone during last year's race. Landis is banned from the sport for 2 years and stripped of his title. You are listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news just ahead, but first, this message.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping a secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
Using rapid bursts of magnetic energy is an effective treatment for serious depression. That's according to a large-scale study. It is considered safe and a viable alternative to both electroshock therapy and antidepressant drugs. Japan's prime minister unveiling a $2 billion aid package to assist developing Asian nations to fight pollution and combat climate change. The initiative includes grants, soft loans, and training programs over 5 years to tackle global warming and foster economic development. Freddie Mac announcing a massive quarterly net loss of $2.3 billion. The mortgage company says it was forced to set aside $1.2 billion to pay for home loans that went bad. Retailer Limited Brands blaming unseasonably warm autumn weather for poor sales and a 48% plunge in quarterly profit. The Ohio-based company lowered its financial outlook as well. Abercrombie & Fitch posting a 15% boost in quarterly profit, even though sales were fairly flat at comparable stores. Light sweet crude oil trading at $97.29 a barrel, gold at $798.60 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down, plunging 211 points to end at 12,799, NASDAQ down 34 points, S&P 500 off 23. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Good afternoon and welcome to America Back on Track here on the Quality News Network. It's Wednesday, the 21st of November, the day before Thanksgiving. Oh, yum, the turkey is getting ready to be at. I'm your correspondent, Tony Seaton. Today on our broadcast, we're going to be talking first with Stefan Klaproff. He's the leading Swiss broadcaster. He's going to be covering the American elections. We're going to be talking to him about the perceptions from outside our country of what's going on inside our country, and particularly the political ones. In our second half hour, we're supposed to have Paige Harden talking about teen sex and delinquency, but she is apparently delinquent. Probably stuck at an airport trying to get someplace. So Brent Budowski is going to be with us. He's a Washington Observer. He wrote a wonderful piece on The Hill about Thanksgiving and two Americas, and we're going to talk to him about that. Our Seaton Notes today is on Thanksgiving. We have a message that has been central to my celebration of this holiday for years. It was actually an editorial, we believe, in the New York Times back in the 70s, and it's a wonderful story. It's a story, not a Seaton Notes. Our quote of the day is from Walt Whitman, who said, "In the faces of men and women, I see God." That's something to be thankful for, isn't it? Some observations on the news. If it weren't for their oil, we'd have little to talk about with the Saudis. Their social system is, to say the least, backward. An example of just how primitive came to light recently, a woman who was gang raped was sentenced to receive 90 lashes because she'd been out with a man who wasn't a relative at the time of the attack. The 19-year-old woman is a Shiite. Saudi Arabia is essentially a Sunni country, which may or may not explain why, subsequently, the Supreme Judicial Council increased the woman's sentence to 200 lashes and 6 months in prison. The rapists were also sentenced to prison time. The woman's lawyer is being disciplined for having spoken to the media about the case. While the U.S. is towing a careful line with the Saudis, trying to induce them to participate in Middle East peace talks, the State Department did go so far as to characterize the sentence as astonishing. That barely covers it. Have you heard the Sturman drawing over a reinterpretation of FBI crime statistics? CQ Press, which publishes Congressional Quarterly, put out the 14th annual City Crime Rankings, Crime in Metropolitan America, and a number of people are upset with their analysis of the FBI's September 24th crime statistics report. According to CQ Press, Detroit edged out St. Louis for the top spot, the most dangerous city in the country. Those two were followed by Flint, Michigan, Oakland, California, and Birmingham, Alabama. The American cities deemed safest were Mission Viejo in California, Clarkston, New York, Brick Township, New Jersey, Amherst, New York, and Sugar Land, Texas. A number of cities were not included in the assessment because their data was either incomplete or missing. They include significant cities, Chicago and Minneapolis, neither of which were going to be worse than Detroit and St. Louis, or probably Oakland or the others. Both the FBI and various criminology types complained about the ranking, saying the interpretation of the government numbers were mixing watermelons and grapes. But finesse is not the issue. If Detroit or St. Louis or Oakland is more dangerous or less, the real point is whether or not they're going to do anything to scrape themselves off the bottom and move themselves in the right direction. That doesn't seem to be the case. Julie Myers is the Director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Hers was a recess appointment earlier this year when the Senate was not in session to avoid a fight because she had few credentials to justify her appointment, as well as a number of family members in the administration, and it looked like nepotism. Still, she apparently did a good job during her year in office, and it was looking like the Senate would formally approve her, as is required to remain in the post. But then she got into trouble. She and two other managers at the agency awarded a Most Original Costume Prize at their Halloween party to a white employee who came dressed as an escaped prisoner with dreadlocks and darkened skin. Some racialist groups complained that this was racial insensitivity, and Myers apologized. But apparently that wasn't enough for Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to allow a vote on her nomination. He may not have a vote at all this year, and Myers would be forced to leave. I didn't see the costume. I don't know why government agencies need to have Halloween costume parties, for that matter. But good grief, if the woman was doing the job, if anyone in the Bush administration is getting anything done properly, we certainly shouldn't kick them out for such a truly minor transgression, if it were one at all. Michael Chertoff has done it again, that is, failed. The head of the Department of Homeland Spuriousness has called new radiation detection equipment a vital priority for making our borders safe, and he was contracting to get his new equipment so it could check buses and trains and boats and planes coming into the U.S. He got $1.2 billion from the Congress for 1,400 machines, but alas, they don't work. And to make matters worse, thank goodness tomorrow's a day off. To make matters worse, there is a federal investigation now underway to learn if Homeland Security officials tried to get an analyst to destroy test results on the performance of these devices. It could take another year, if ever, for these detectors to become operational. Finally, you probably don't have an indelible image of Scott McClellan. He was at one time the White House press secretary. For months, he insisted to the American public that President Bush, Vice President Cheney, and Karl Rove had nothing to do with the leaking of the name of CIA operative Valerie Plame, an act designed to punish her husband, Joseph Wilson, for his op-ed piece challenging the White House story about Saddam getting nuclear materials from Niger. McClellan was simply repeating what he was told by these men. He apparently believed them at the time, but not anymore. There's a book coming out in April entitled What Happened Inside the Bush White House and What's Wrong with Washington. His publisher just released several paragraphs from the book in which McClellan says that he was lied to by Bush, by Cheney, by Rove, by Libby, and by the White House, then White House Chief of Staff. I don't know who that was at the time. It wasn't in the text. McClellan goes way back with Bush, having worked with him when he was governor of Texas. Okie dokie. Play some music here. There we go. We'll be back with more of America Back on Track in just 2 minutes and a couple of seconds. Stay tuned.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking.
What are you looking for in your business bank?
Somebody that can offer me services such as car loans, equipment loans, leases, a line of credit.
And do you think because they're local, they understand your needs better than a bigger bank would?
Yes, I think they're really aware of the community and are here to help the small business people.
So it's a local bank with big bank services?
Absolutely. They're here on a regular basis to make sure if there's any other services they can provide, they're here to talk about it.
Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
We searched out a bank that would have the flexibility and the understanding of our needs and a willingness to spend the time doing that.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
We're back, America Back on Track here on the Quality News Network, and most pleased to have with us Stefan Klaproth, who is a broadcaster in the country of Switzerland. Now, I know all of your minds go to The Sound of Music. That was actually in Austria, but it's nearby, and some of the scenery is the same. A quick backgrounder on Switzerland. It's officially called the Swiss Federation. It's got about 7.5 million people, covers 16,000 square miles, about a little less than the size of New Hampshire and Vermont. It has 26 states in it. They are referred to as cantons. Bern, B-E-R-N-E, is the capital. The major economic centers are Geneva and Zurich. Switzerland is bordered by Germany, France, Italy, Austria, and Liechtenstein. They have four languages, a multilingual country, German, French, Italian, and Romansh. Did I get any of that right, Stefan?
Everything is perfect. You could be a teacher of Swiss politics and civil things. Excellent.
It would be a very short course. That's as far as I know. What is your position? You are a broadcaster in Switzerland. Where are you located?
Yeah, we're in Zurich, Swiss National Television, and I'm the news anchor for 10 o'clock news with Swiss National Television.
And that's the main newscasting for the country.
We do have one main station for three of the four languages you mentioned. So we have one. We are the majority group with 65% of the people speaking German or Swiss German. Then 20% speaking French, and they have their own television station in Geneva. And then the Italian-speaking minority, 5% approximately, they have their own station in Lugano.
In Lugano. There's a gorgeous lake.
Yeah, two, Locarno and Lugano, two beautiful lakes. Beautiful lake in Zurich, and most beautiful in Lucerne. like of Lucerne. That's where I was born, and that's why it's the most beautiful.
Of course. I haven't been myself. One of my sisters lived in Switzerland for several years when her husband was with a Swiss bank. You are coming over to this country, or you're going to cover the 2008 elections?
That's right. I mean, we do have two correspondents on a permanent basis, one in Washington, D.C., the other in San Francisco. And I myself, as an anchor, because we predict or we are sure that in the period right before the upcoming elections in 2008, there will be even more interest for American politics, and people want to have more than the usual coverage. So we decided to send the anchor, myself, then over here, and we will, during 2 weeks, we will have a series with additional special reports about the politics and the life in this country, and so I'm preparing for this just coming up in a year, but I mean it needs to be prepared and well, and I take every opportunity to come over here. I have kind of a love and hate relationship with the U.S. probably, as many Europeans do.
This is my principal interest, is to find out what is the perception of the United States from outside, and let me preface this by saying it has long appeared to me in the early part of this decade, when the Bush administration was first in power, when I would speak to people, particularly from Europe, they would say, we are able to separate the American people from their government. We love the people. We hate the administration. Two things. First, they were very well informed about what we were doing in this country. And second, that attitude seems to have shifted as more people say, where the hell is the American people? Why aren't they doing something about their government?
There may be some truth in it, though I would think that still people know to make the difference. The personality, the president, President Bush, George W. Bush, has attracted so much of, not hatred maybe, but so much of disapproval. I have seen that the disapproval rate here would be something like 70%. In Europe, it might be 93% or 99%. So I think people still, their anger goes towards the administration. But as things go, people then maybe have generalized a little and were disappointed by the fact that there was not more resistance coming from, or especially disappointed about American media, because the New York Times, Washington Post, that would have been to everyone in media all over Europe the heroes, the way to go, the ones who showed us how to handle, how to be independent, and then nobody could understand how it could happen that just before and right after the beginning of the war in Iraq, why the media system didn't work anymore. So that was a big disappointment. But I think people still know how to make the difference between the administration and their position. And now we have learned or seen that within the U.S. there is a lot of criticism, and the system seems to be able to fix itself. So I think people make the difference between what the administration has done and the responsibility of the whole system.
And let's hope we can fix it. What is the perception? How do the people in Switzerland see who we are? Who is America? Is there a way to define that?
As you said, probably 10 years ago, it was too very many people the idol, the role model, and that has gone back a little bit, and that's a little bit less the case right now. People have been disappointed, and what has been the soft power of America has gone down a little bit. People are probably a little bit less fascinated because of this disappointment.
It's the story of the emperor's new clothes.
Exactly, the emperor appeared to be a little bit more naked than we would have thought and hoped even.
Yeah.
So that traditionally there we would have had mostly left-wing circles, or what do you call liberals, who were pretty criticizing the U.S. Whereas now you have, politically speaking, also more conservative parties who dissociated them a little bit from American positions. It's not really popular, the some politicians we do have who stick still clearly in a Tony Blair way of doing things with America have a hard time in Switzerland, but in Germany, like Chancellor Merkel, and they try, I mean, they say still in power, they have a hard time because the disappointment is the big word for them.
That's a very good description. How is your country seems far more informed about things than our country. There was a survey earlier this year that said more Americans knew the judges on the TV show American Idol than could find Iraq on the map of the world. And I don't know what the statistics are. We're not doing very well with education in terms of an educated citizenry. And this is not about America bashing. This is trying to get some perspective from abroad on what we're doing and why we're not doing it better. That's a very muddy question.
I missed the question a little bit. Where is the question, if I may ask?
What is in the Swiss people that has them more interested in being informed as citizens?
Well, it's such a small country with borders. After 1 hour of riding your bike or by car or by train, you hit the border. So, I mean, you have to be orientated versus the exterior. So people have to. But then, in the case of America now, there is a huge interest about what's going on in America. And I think the reason, several reasons probably, but one must be the feeling that we are really concerned, that we have been suffering from the effects of American policy and strategies.
In what ways?
Well, that the worsening of the world situation.
Terrorism, economy,
terrorism,
energy, global warming,
everything, and the fact that people think that the present administration has not handled all these things very well, and many people feel that with the upcoming elections we have something at stake. It concerns us. It's our elections in a certain sense, even if we are not voting, don't have the right to vote, but the outcome will have a very direct effect on what is going on in Europe, in Switzerland. So people are interested on that basis. And the second reason might probably be that there are fascinating personalities, actors on stage. I mean, everybody knows Hillary Clinton from the time when she was involved in this Shakespearean drama of her husband seeing other ladies. I mean, she's very well known, even better known than many Swiss personalities, so people are interested. Then you had this young, upcoming John F. Kennedy-like person, Barack Obama. People are fascinated. 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, everybody who knows something about America would have said, never in this century a black man will be president in the United States. Now this seems seems possible. People are fascinated by the rhythm of change in your country, and these two persons, and people follow almost day by day the competition between Mr. Obama, Mrs. Clinton, among my friends and people I know. I can ask everyone, are you rather in favor of Obama or Clinton? Everyone has an opinion, interestingly.
What is the impression of these people?
I think that a vast majority in Switzerland probably hopes that they will get, or you will get, and the whole world will get rather a democratic president. Also because on the other side, in the Republican camp, people don't know who is on stage. Maybe they would know Mr. Giuliani from the time when he appeared as America's mayor and after 9/11. But other than that, they have no idea. They didn't see the TV series with Fred Thompson. So there is a black hole. We don't know who is on stage. And then probably people think, well, the Republican camp has not very well handled now the situation, so let's give the Democrats a chance.
Do they like Hillary Clinton?
Yes, I would say most, especially I notice among women. All my friends, female people I know, probably everyone is fascinated by the fact that a woman could become the leader of the strongest nation in the world. Everybody would, I know, is in favor.
What are the issues that people in Switzerland are most concerned about? I mean, obviously you're high up, so global warming isn't going to at least lap the shores of your country away. But
not, but it changes things because we have a lot of regions or villages or small towns who live from winter sports. And we could even see that the limit where you can do winter sport, where there is snow, was going up during the last decade or 20 years. And so we have regions that got into trouble. They used to be winter sport places, and now nobody wants to go there because right now in November and there is no snow, so that is a concern.
You know, it's not just about Switzerland or the United States, as you point out, I think, so significantly, that America is looked to by many countries as, if not the shining city on the hill, tarnished shining city on the hill, but as driving so much of the world's economy, pollution. We in China are the biggest polluters. Is there a hope, perhaps, that the U.S. will become more involved in the national scheme of things and be aware of its power and influence? We don't seem to be there yet.
Yeah, I think there is a hope, and especially with regard to the environment problem. I mean, everybody noticed that it was more than everyone is what Al Gore who advanced the subject, and even there was a effect in Switzerland. I mean, we have the same discussions between parties. Should we have more taxes on fuel and things? And there was this Al Gore effect now because it became so popular to be in favor of reducing pollution and so on that all the parties who wanted to have a more ecological policy in our country could refer to Al Gore. So people realized that sometimes the problems come from America and the solutions come thereafter. So I think there is pretty much hope, especially in the environmental field.
Or is Switzerland moving towards green in their own ways?
Yeah, slowly, slowly. But we do have, probably compared to America, we do have some pretty good rules. And well, like in California, as far as I can see, if you buy a smaller car, you can get some subsidies and things.
Indeed. We're talking with Stefan Klaproth. He is the anchor for Swiss television. His audience is 65%. Eat your heart out, Brian Williams and Charlie Gibson. And we will be back with more with him about the conceptions from abroad, the perceptions from abroad of who we are and where we're going as a country and a planet. Stay tuned. You're listening to America Back on Track on the Quality News Network.
Hi, I'm Brian Gingrich of Monterey Mattress Company. The only way to travel is by using the very best, and the very best in a major sleep product is any mattress from Monterey Mattress Company. Literally serving all parts of the world, we have been building the finest latex foam and innerspring mattresses for well over 20 years. Using our world-famous hotels as a measuring stick, you'll more often hear the name Monterey Mattress, as we supply over 100 resort hotels in this area. Far exceeding industry standards, these mattresses are available to you at factory prices. In addition to the local recognition, Monterey Mattress Company has been shipping beds worldwide to the many visitors who have experienced a great night's sleep here. This is the ultimate endorsement enjoyed by very few businesses. Monterey Mattress Company. We simply build the best, whether for your home or world-renowned resorts. Visit us today at 1714 Contra Costa in Sand City or on the World Wide Web at MontereyMattress.com. Sleep like a panda bear.
Attention homeowners, this is Sharon Law Tucker. You've heard me talk about various mortgage types over the past several months. Now I want to talk to you about reverse mortgages. I believe that quality of life and having options is extremely important. The biggest concern for most seniors today is to stay in their homes, yet they are living on an income that can no longer meet their basic living needs. Through reverse mortgage loan products, I can help senior homeowners stay in their homes, get tax-free cash for any purpose, including monthly income, home improvements, medical care, travel, and much more. I can help you remove the stress and worry from your your life take the burden of responsibility from your children and enjoy a better quality of life. If you are a senior homeowner, call me today for a free copy of the Reverse Mortgage Handbook. I'll send it to you at no cost, no obligation. Phone me, Sharon Law Tucker, at the Reverse Mortgage Center, 831-809-1705, 831-809-1705. Pacific Home Lending is licensed by the California DRE, license number 01254837.
We're back, America Back on Track, and so delighted to have with us in the studio Stefan Klaproth, who is the anchor for Swiss television. Stefan, people think of Switzerland as Heidi, watches, chocolate, banking gnomes, neutrality, guns, and military service. Do you want to set us straight on any of that?
Yeah, well, 2 weeks ago I would have liked to, and I would have tried to, because it we find it not so flattering, because there's a lot more, actually, as in every country, modern country, you have a lot of inventors, even some Nobel Prize winners in the chemistry field, etc. But then, 2 weeks ago, I moderated a panel about this question, how should Switzerland do marketing for itself? And we had all these specialists telling, yeah, we should try to get the other image, the other sides people don't know, other than Heidi, across the audience. And then we had a specialist, I guess it's the British government's advisor on nationality marketing, and he is a consultant for all the governments of the world, it seems. And he came and he said, forget about it. You can try. You are the Heidi country. It is chocolate. It is watches. So you'd rather stick with it. So now I don't even try. If people come over, it is worthwhile. And they will see that there is much more, and especially the multicultural, multilingual thing may be an interesting role model, how to make different groups live together without struggling too much. We have interesting mechanisms in politics, etc. But people will not care. They love Heidi and chocolate, and so I let them just do that.
That's what they'll go home with.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, when we read about the major international discussions that take place, the UN has two major offices in Geneva, I think.
That's right.
The Red Cross is in Geneva or Zurich?
Geneva.
A great deal is done, and the neutrality issue is significant to me, because it seems like an important place to stake one's, you know, to not be part of a war. And yet during the Second World War it has, and subsequent in terms of the finances and the Jews' properties, it has been significant of late.
Yes, and we do have a permanent discussion about, everybody is in favor of neutrality, but there is a huge discussion about how to interpret it, what it means. And we have this more right-wing, one very strong now, a right-wing party says neutrality means not to be melted in anything, just to stay away. It's an isolationist position in American terms, probably. And then you have something like 40 or 50% of the population, probably with a penchant to this position. Let's do the world what they want to do and not interfere. But then you have probably a slight majority who would say no, neutrality gives us is a means also to help in other places, and to, as a neutral actor, to help have negotiations and so on. So you have two interpretations of neutrality, and there's a permanent discussion, and sometimes there's rather the more isolationist view that prevails, and then it's but it's 50-50, I'd say.
We are having discussions in this country all the time about guns, and the U.S. Supreme Court is going to consider a measure about whether or not the handguns can be banned from a jurisdiction. Is it not still a requirement in Switzerland that every household or every man own a gun?
That's right, because we have no professional army. Every young man, if he's well in good health, he has to go to do his military service for 4 months in the first year, and then 1 month every year after. So it is really a non-professional army. Everybody has to go there, and people then, after service, after 4 months, take their gun to their home and keep it there. We have had recently some tragical incidents with AMOC shootings and people using their military weapon. So now, for a couple of months ago, there started we have this debate if we should change it, that people are no longer allowed to take their gun to their home because then they have it at hand. When if someone
goes crazy.
So it is not decided yet. You have, again, you have the conservative camp who say, no, this is a tradition. Well, traditionally, it was to be prepared if there is an enemy coming, like in the Second World War. The idea was that within 24 hours, you could have the troops out there because everyone has his gun at hand and will be ready and knows where to go, to what place, and they will be there. Now, more modern strategists say a modern war will not take place like this, so we could keep the guns in the
armories.
Mm-hmm. But now it has not been decided. The conservative camp says, no, it is a tradition, we want to stick to it, and it's not because of one or two or even 10 tragic incidents that we will change this. But a majority now, especially among women, because they have often been the victims. Women and children in a family if things turn really bad. So I would predict that within 2 or 3 years, as we have this system with initiatives, we can vote. Now someone is preparing for an initiative and they will ask that arms no longer to be in the households, and I think it will pass within 1 or 2 or 3 years maximum.
Stefan Klaproth, Swiss broadcaster, anchor extraordinaire on the German network. I want to thank you very much for being with us today on America Back on Track. We look forward to collaborating with you in the course of your coverage of the American political elections.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
And we will be back with our friend Brent Badowski, who is a Washington Observer who has written a very nice piece, Thanksgiving in the Two Americas, right after this. Stay tuned. You're listening to America Back on Track on the Quality News Network.
For an insider's look at quality news coverage, be sure to read two of the latest books by award-winning journalist and author Tony Seaton. The Quality Interview and Don't Mess with the Press transport the reader into the world of journalism, including the ups and downs of network news coverage and what it's really like reporting the important events we see happening every day around the world. Don't Mess with the Press is an intriguing and engaging chronicle of Tony's early career, beginning with his start as a copy boy for ABC News back in the 1970s, to working his way up to become producer of network news interviews for Barbara Walters. The Quality Interview is the definitive guide to the art of the interview. Learn interviewing basics and much more, including how to get crucial information out of even the toughest interview. For more on Don't Mess with the Press and The Quality Interview by Tony Seaton, visit our website at www.qualitynewsnetwork.com.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for: quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
We be back, America Back on Track. And most pleased to have with us our friend Brent Badowski. He is a Washington Observer, and he wrote a delightful piece. Well, it's not cheerful, mostly, but it's called Thanksgiving in the Two Americas. Brent, welcome to America Back on Track.
Good to be here, Tony.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
And the same to everybody in the audience.
Thank you. Your piece, Thanksgiving in the Two Americas. In our Two Americas, you write, this holiday season will be the best of times for some and the worst for others. And it is a moment to give thanks not for what we have, but to those who live their lives in the true spirit of America. What is that spirit, Brent?
Well, it's a spirit of the rising tide lifting all of the boats, is the way that Jack Kennedy put it. It's the spirit of opportunity for all. And when you need a government, the government empowers and enables people to rise as high as their talents and God-given gifts allow. And it's a government that protects the people from predatory practices and crooks and abuses of all kinds. It's a spirit where we are all in this together, of the people, by the people, and for the people. What it is not is a spirit where 1% at the top make all the money, 1% at the troop level die in the wars, and almost everybody below the top is basically getting ripped off on a number of fronts. So it's the three musketeers, one for all for one, is the idea of America. And what we're seeing in the last few years is something other than that, that I think the people are about to change.
How?
Oh, I think you're going to get a new Congress with more Democrats. You may well get a Democratic president. And you're getting a spirit in the country. What's amazing to me is how 70% of the American people disapprove of just about everything. They disapprove of the president, the Congress, the war in Iraq. They disapprove of torture. They disapprove of eavesdropping. And I see that 70% number comes up. And one thing I can tell you is that a lot of people here, politicians in both parties, are going to have to listen, and they're scared to death, is the honest truth, about every time they go home, the people tell them they're not doing a good job. And if that kind of a movement in the end, while it's never easy, that's where change comes from.
I appreciate what you're saying. I wish I were more optimistic about the Democrats. It's not that they're not different from the Republicans in large measure. You look at the Republicans and they're screaming about trying to be more bellicose than the other. But I don't hear from the Democrats the embodiment of that spirit you're talking about, which, by the way, I agree is there. I, you know, 73%, 75% say we're off track, but I don't hear the Democrats saying that.
Well, let me give you the good news and the bad news. The bad news first. You're right. And I mean, I know and love the Democratic leadership. I'm friends and a supporter of Harry Reid. I've been helping Pelosi for years get a Democratic House. But they've obviously fallen short. You know it. I know it. They know it. The Democrats know it. And Democrats around the country know it. And they've got to develop the portion of the male anatomy that gives one courage. There's no question about that. Yeah. Putting it on FCC-approved language.
Yeah.
Now, the good news is I think people are going to be astonished and amazed if you get a Democratic president, any one of them, at the level of change in America, because we are removing what I consider to be, and I use this word guardedly, one of the great evils that has ever plagued American politics and our government in our history. And what's been going on recently, the last 6 years, is just appalling and scandalous. You've got a president that allows torture and a Republican frontrunner who endorses torture as his campaign platform, referring to Rudy Giuliani. He brags he committed torture when he was a U.S. attorney. You've got a level of economic unfairness and inequity, witnessed, by the way, by the great personal wealth accumulated on Wall Street and among those companies that did mortgage financing, by the very people who caused the problem that is decimating middle America, decimating average Americans who want nothing more than a home to live in for the family they love. And at the bottom of the barrel, you've got homelessness is rising. Homelessness among veterans is one of the great outrages of our time, and that's rising. You've got disabled troops, wounded soldiers, paralyzed veterans are suffering left and right. Now, what you have in America right now is a disenfranchised and disempowered 70% of the country waiting to be empowered and enfranchised. And the blockade that you have right now is a Republican president and vice president who are out of control. We just saw the latest last night where their own former press secretary accused the president and vice president of lying about the Scooter Libby case. And you've got a Republican Congress that when they had power, they abused it. And now that they're in the minority, they're obstructing everything. When we remove those blockades, I think people will be astonished at even the worst Democratic president and the worst Democratic Congress, whatever that is going to be dramatically and infinitely better because the bottleneck to idealism and hope will be removed. And it's going to let loose forces in America that I think will surprise people on the positive side. And trust me, there will be cheering in the streets in every capital of the world when George Bush gets into that helicopter and leaves Washington for the last time. I mean, he's the first American president who has reached this level of being hated around the world. and anyone will be better. Any Democrat will be dramatically better. And so I don't underestimate at all the problems that we have in the Democratic Party. I've been publicly critical of them, as you know. I've been critical to their face with some of the high levels I know. But the reason I'm optimistic once this thing is over, the election, is I think you'll have the opportunity for a new era of reform that even the most conservative of the Democratic presidential candidates would open up all kinds of opportunities and aspirations and hopes for a new era. And I think people will be positively surprised on the upside, even though we've got to wage the fight here on two fronts, fighting the Republicans and trying to give the Democrats that portion of their anatomy that has been missing. There's no question about it.
I love your FCC codicil. Brent, on Reuters, the lead all day today has been, the headline is, Americans enter holidays in dark mood. The first sentence, Americans enter the holiday season in a dark mood with economic worries, security fears, and a lack of confidence in government fueling growing pessimism, according to Zogby, a Reuters poll that was released today. Do we think that by changing a couple of seats, maybe a dozen seats in the Congress, that this will make a difference? Or are the special interests, have they so entrenched themselves with their financial aid to the campaigns that they are controlling it, not the party or the 535 members of the Congress?
Well, I think they're both true, ironically. But I think much more important than a few seats in Congress is to elect a Democratic president to go with that Congress. If you look at the behavior of a Democratic Congress with a Republican president, they are so fear-ridden. I mean, Bush has the politics of fear to try to frighten people into surrendering freedoms and liberties and frighten people into these new wars they're cooking up almost every day now. The Democrats in Congress are fearful. They have fallen into the trap and they've fallen for the game. If you look at the same Democrats in Congress with a Democratic president where there's an agenda, with all of their shortcomings and faults, you'll see major health care reform enacted. You'll see economic policies that are far more progressive and enlightened and fair that are enacted. You'll see the restoration of the Supreme Court. If we get to pick another one or two or three nominees, there will be four justices instead of this travesty that we've had right now, where we're one justice away from repealing the Bill of Rights. It is extraordinary. Okay, those are big differences. You're absolutely right. The fight I hope Democrats wage, if Democrats win the presidency, is on campaign financing reform, specifically public financing, to take all that corrupting money out of it. What will be interesting is that the next president will support it, including Hillary. The majority of the Congress will support it. They don't want it. And we can put the pressure on, and we could probably enact some significant reforms. But there is definitely truth in what you say, that money corrupts, and the more money it corrupts, more. And of the 10 leading business sectors, almost all of them, and maybe all of them now, are giving the majority of their money to Democrats. So it'll be a challenge of their integrity if they do win even more seats than a president. When you have all these defense contractors and banks giving money to Democrats, they have to stand up, and that's going to be a test of whether they have the heart and the mind, as well as the courage.
And the votes, indeed. Brent, I want to thank you very much for stepping in today, and I appreciate your analysis. Lord knows our country is going to need some significant leaders. May they be Democrats, Independents, Republicans, or for that matter, Venusians.
Not for the Venusians.
they probably would pull more votes. Brent, thank you for being with us again
today.
Okay,
everybody have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Brent. And we will be back with Seat Notes right after these messages, a special Thanksgiving commentary. We'll be right back.
Remember when the name on the door said it all? In today's world, it's the website that defines a company's image. For better or worse, a company's presence on the internet is a vital factor in how it keeps existing customers and attracts new clients. Byte Technology of Monterey is a leader in a new approach to web design. Byte designs a new site based on the mission, purpose, character, and indeed the energy of their clients. Byte is particularly successful in presenting their clients' name to the global internet community because they approach the design with a clear, defined process. By fully understanding the client's business, motivation, and operation, they are able to translate the company's critical values into the new website. In addition to original design, Byte works with clients to update their website to reflect changes in target markets, products and services, and the business climate. Byte Technology. See what they're about at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission. Mary Knoll.
Before past the hour, and time for seat notes. Berkeley, Virginia has long claimed that they are the first Thanksgiving by a year and 19 days before the Pilgrims did. If you know your history, settlers arrived in Virginia, well, it wasn't Virginia then, call that, establishing Jamestown and other colonies in the early 17th century, while the Pilgrims landed in Massachusetts in 1620, and they held their first Thanksgiving a year later. Okay? I was brought up in Massachusetts. Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday, so I say a groundless pshaw to Berkeley, Virginia. And every year I recount this story, which was passed along from someone who says he thought he'd seen it as a New York Times editorial in the late 70s. And we pass it along to you from all of us here at the Quality News Network with best wishes for you and yours that you should feel like giving thanks. There is a half-forgotten story about an early settlement on the New England shore that is worth remembering. After the first two difficult years, this colony gathered a modest harvest, caught cod aplenty, took venison, and had substantial cabins for shelter. They had even made friends with the Indians, but some people were dubious about the winter ahead, particularly the leaders, and a day of prayer and fasting was decreed. The people gathered, heard a long opening prayer of apology for human weakness and shortcoming. It was followed by a long confession by one of the elders, not only for himself, but for the whole community. Others rose to detail the trials of life and own up their sins and errors. The meeting droned on and on until at last a little man stalked forward from the back of the room and said, "I must dissent. I've heard enough of sin and damnation." A startled gasp went through the room. The little man went on, "I have fasted till my belly griped, meditated my sins till my mind reeled, asked forgiveness till I was ashamed even for asking. Now I must lift mine eyes in thanks or lift them not at all." The little man went on, "We had privations. Some of us died. We froze and we starved. And now we have a harvest. We have wood for our fires, meat for our eating, clothes to cover our nakedness. Why then do we abase ourselves? What is our sin beyond the fact that we are still alive?" He lifted his head proudly. "Let us be done with whimpers and complaints. Let us lift our hearts and thank the good Lord for the things we have and the work we still can do." A murmur filled the room, a murmur of relief. The most eloquent confessors looked abashed. Neighbor turned to neighbor, and for the first time that day there were smiles. Life's whole complexion had changed. And within an hour, the fireplace spits were provisioned and turning, the pots were simmering, women cooked, children got underfoot, men brought planks and set up tables and benches. Before sundown, that day of fasting and prayer had become a day of feasting and thanksgiving. And as I say, I think that's from a New York Times editorial back in the 70s, and that's sort of our seat and notes for November the 21st. We wish a happy Thanksgiving to all of you in Massachusetts, in Virginia, and elsewhere across our great country. Thanks to Stefan Klaproth, the Swiss broadcast anchor, and to our friend Brent Budowski for making this a special day. Tomorrow is a replay of a previously recorded America Back on Track featuring an interview with Iraq veteran Valerie Natoli, and we will be back again with you on Friday. Have a great day. I'm Tony Seaton.
Yeah.
Hueyl-Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
So what do you look for when you decide where you're going to put all your millions?
Well, I haven't printed up enough to put it in the bank yet, but I guess for convenience, and pretty much it's like a grocery market. You get to meet the people there, and you build a little rapport with some of them.
You know, it's a local bank, but it's part of a network of local banks that give you big bank services.
Everything that I need as far as banking is concerned, they have it. Online banking is great for me. So I just like the services that they offer.
You ever taken your dog Cindy to the bank?
As a matter of fact, when I went to open my account, she was with me.
Ah!
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a horse come through one of these days. We got a lot of cowboys come in and out of here, too.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Are you one of so many people who wish they could wake up in the morning and look at the clock without fumbling for glasses first? I've got news for you. Your wish can come true. Most cases of nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism can be corrected by the laser procedure known as LASIK. Now, is this procedure without risk or guaranteed? No, but complications are extremely rare, and the outcomes are almost always positive. And if your results aren't exactly as expected, you can be retreated in most cases for no additional cost. You should be realistic about your expectations, though, especially if you're over 40, because unless you have what's called monovision, you will still need your glasses for reading. See your eye doctor about LASIK. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
You're listening to KRML, 1410 AM, Carmel, California. The news from the Quality News Network is next.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones is down more than 200 points just before today's close. We'll have the numbers coming up in our business block. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf may leave his military post as early as Saturday, according to a top official. Musharraf will take the presidential oath as a civilian. This was a key demand that President Bush and others urged. President Bush and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice will host an international conference with Middle East leaders next week in Annapolis, Maryland. 49 world leaders have been invited to attend next week's summit. Secretary Rice says they will try to reach a peace deal between the Israelis and Palestinians. However, she cautions that success is not guaranteed. Israel has agreed to release 432 Palestinian prisoners as a goodwill token prior to the November 27th summit. The BBC reports thousands of displaced Iraqis have begun returning home. According to Iraq's Ministry of... This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones dropped more than 200 points at the end of trading today. We'll have the final numbers coming up in our business block. President Bush and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice will host an international conference with Middle East leaders next week in Annapolis, Maryland. Secretary Rice says she will try to reach a peace deal between the Israelis and the Palestinians. However, she cautions that success is not guaranteed. Israel has agreed to release 432 Palestinian prisoners as a goodwill token prior to the November 27th summit. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf may leave his military post as early as Saturday, according to a top official. Musharraf will take the presidential oath as a civilian. As the December 2nd Russian parliamentary election approaches, President Vladimir Putin attacked his political opponents. He accused them of being tools of foreign, specifically pro-Western, governments. The BBC reports thousands of displaced Iraqis have begun returning home. According to Iraq's Ministry of Migration, about 1,000 people are returning daily. Officials say the drop in violence, improved security, as well as incentives from the Iraqi government are responsible for the rising numbers. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown issued a public apology today for a security breach that affects 25 million people in Britain. The two lost computer disks contain bank account and personal information on millions of people, and it is described as the largest incident of its kind in Europe. Former French President Jacques Chirac is facing a formal investigation for embezzlement of public funds when he was mayor of Paris. The allegations stem from a scheme in which city jobs were given to political sympathizers. Chirac denies the charges. The French government and striking transit workers are back at the bargaining table trying to end the 8-day-old strike.
Early this morning, striking hardliners set fire to railway cables and signal boxes, causing delays in a coordinated attack of sabotage on France's high-speed railway system. Airports across the U.S. are packed with travelers today. A record nearly 39 million Americans are expected to travel at least 50 miles this Thanksgiving holiday. Michigan's Supreme Court approved the January 15th presidential primary date. Based on this decision, the state of New Hampshire just announced January 8th will be the date of its presidential primary, which is the first in the nation. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Have you ever found yourself swatting at a fly no one else sees? Chances are you're seeing what we commonly call a floater. Many people have them and have had them for a while. Floaters are condensed proteins located in the gel-like part of our eyes called the vitreous. As we age, this gel becomes more liquefied, and so whatever debris was once trapped inside is now freer to float around. They are typically harmless, but you should check with your eye doctor if you notice new floaters, especially if they appear after a flash of light, or if you should notice a curtaining effect of your side vision. Otherwise, that squiggly critter you see, especially when you look at a blue sky or a white background, is probably with you for life and should simply be ignored. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on Eye Care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
According to the Calorie Control Council, on Thanksgiving Day, the average American eats 4,500 calories and nearly 230 grams of fat. Doctors are now saying if you feel sleepy after a big Thanksgiving Day meal, don't blame the turkey. The amino acid tryptophan in the holiday bird is the usual suspect for feeling drowsy, but nutritionists say people at the traditional meal have simply eaten too much. Retailer The Gap reports its third quarter profit was up 26%. However, the company says its full-year outlook may not meet Wall Street expectations. The National Retail Federation expects retail sales to grow 4% in November and December. That would be the smallest increase since 2002. A new survey by two consumer groups finds that about 35% of consumers say they will spend less this holiday season than last year. One of the reasons why is the increase in gasoline costs. Gas is now about a dollar more per gallon compared to 1 year ago. Gold is trading at $798.60 an ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $97.29 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 211 points, the NASDAQ was down 35, and the S&P 500 down 23. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramov.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's Wednesday. It's the pre-Thanksgiving edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thank you very kindly for coming along and joining me. Joining us, this happy little family, this merry band that gets together here on the Head On Radio Network most every day. Hope you've got all your Thanksgiving stuff ready to roll. Hope you know what you're thankful for. Hope you know that there are people out there that aren't too thankful and that you can take them into consideration as you, as you celebrate your own family feast.
why would people not be thankful? Let's start with the Native American community. This ain't a day of Thanksgiving. This is a day of grieving. But, you know, it's not just the day before Thanksgiving. The day before Thanksgiving just happens to always be a Wednesday. And you know what Wednesday means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
You're doggone right, because this is, after all, prayer meeting. And that means it's time to come on down to the altar, place your hands upon the subwoofer, and feel the healing waves of audio magnificence a-flowing through you. Hallelujah, glory! I am Brother Bob Kincaid, and you are in the Cathedral of Common Sense. And I hope you will make yourself welcome. So we start this being, you know, and I've got Thanksgiving stuff coming, okay? I mean, all kinds of fun. Right after the beginning of the third hour, we're going to be joined by the Internet's most brilliant satirist, the one, the only Eugene Finerman of FinermanWorks.com, F-I-N-E-R-M-A-N, Works, W-O-R-K-S.com, and we'll talk about perhaps some of the less touched upon aspects of Thanksgiving. I think you'll probably enjoy them. Just to give you a little taste, I don't want to spoil anything, but Eugene's Your RDA of Irony today touches on this very subject, Thanksgiving. And you might find that entirely interesting. As Eugene notes, the chief of the neighborhood, Massasoit, had the responsibility of getting rid of the Europeans almost 400 years ago. It was getting a little bit difficult to ignore the interlopers, what Tom Tancredo might refer to as the illegal aliens. But I'm not going to spoil that. We're going to have a blast with it, Eugene and I, sometime around 8:06 Eastern Time, I believe. A little bit of storytelling time, being Thanksgiving. It's time once again to repeat my own little family's epic Thanksgiving adventure. This is one of those moments I miss having Agnes producing, because she'd be sitting here throwing pencils at me and things as I tell the story. So don't let me forget to get to that. I had mentioned a reading that I like to do. I wasn't able to find the text online today, so that's not going to happen, but we'll save that for Christmas. Some short fiction by Truman Capote. All kinds of fun stuff lined up for this evening, but, you know, just because it's the night before Thanksgiving doesn't mean that everything grinds to a halt, and it certainly isn't an excuse for us to avoid our prayer meeting obligations here on this Wednesday evening. After the show is over, I've already figured out what I'm going to do. You know, I enjoy cooking a lot, and I enjoy cooking especially when there's danger involved. So I have this nexus, and this happens to me every year. You know, it just does. We got a big family. There's not enough time to put a frozen turkey in the refrigerator for 2 weeks and wait for it to thaw, because we have to have the everyday food of everyday eating in there, and it just doesn't jibe. So I have to power thaw a turkey every year. And this year I think I've come up with my best plan yet. Sometime around 1 a.m., after All Foxed Up has closed out, after I have started the rerun stream that will go from 1 a.m. Thursday morning until roughly, 3 p.m. Monday afternoon, because we are taking the holiday off, with the exception, of course, of Rick's Place on the weekend, as well as Night Sounds with your host, Billy Shears. After I've set up that rerun stream, I'm going to go outside and play with fire. I'm going to take the partially thawed bird, take its plastic wrapping off of it, and I'm going to slowly hickory smoke it to thaw it. Wile E. Coyote, you genius. So we will have a gently hickory-smoked turkey tomorrow for our family feast. All right, enough levity, enough frivolity. Off into the mire, off into the muck, off into the general nastiness of a wander through fundamentalist America. What do I have in mind? Well, let's go to the state that from whence I arose. My native soil, if you will. Let us go, yes, yea verily, to Alabama. Alabama, where, as we all know, they believe that abstinence only is the only way of teaching children not to have sex. Because, after all, that is what is commanded by the Old Testament. Abstinence only. Thou shalt not have sex without somebody has paid your daddy a goat or several sheep in order to own a woman to have sex with. Because that's what it says in the good book. Well, talk about an underreported lead. Headline, Alabama ranks high in reported STD cases. You know, Alabama. Where they teach that, you don't want to use one of those little latex thingies on your, you know, and because then that's no good. Just say no. Just say no to what the Italians refer to as the poor man's opera, otherwise known as sex. Now, this is an underreported lead. I love it. Alabama ranks high in reported STD cases. The lead line, Alabama fared no better than the rest of the nation when it comes to reported cases of sexually transmitted diseases. No, Alabama fared a lot worse than the rest of the nation because Alabama is chock-a-block with repiglickins and fundamentalists and phony Christians and hucksters and con men and charlatans and politicians enriching themselves at the expense of the ignorance of the garden variety conservative family values voter. The state, golly, Ned, the state ranks fifth in the United States. Alabama ranks fifth in the United States for chlamydia. It ranks fourth in the nation for cases of gonorrhea and, Alabama ranks second in the United States for syphilis. Officials with the Alabama Department of Public Health said chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis, and the human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV, are the most frequently reported STDs in the state. The most affected age group for chlamydia and gonorrhea is 15 to 19-year-olds. Dear God. Nothing in here, however, about laying blame where it belongs on the people who have said, you know, just don't have sex. No, we can't do that. We can't actually talk rationally about sex. Yeah. So let's take a look at the rest of, because you know, let's no, it's not just Alabama. Heavens to Betsy, what are you thinking? This is fundamentalist. This is fundamentalist born. This is fundamentalist created. This is fundamentalist desired. And it is not something that is just Alabama's problem. No, 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 no. Let's look at the rest of the numbers. You know, I told you that where chlamydia is concerned, and you know what chlamydia is. Chlamydia, well, it can, if it's undetected and untreated, chlamydia can cause things like pelvic pain, infertility in women. The testing is recommended for women younger than 26 years old, women who are pregnant, or women who have new or multiple partners. But we can't be doing that down in Alabama, where all the women's are, of course, flowers of southern gentility. No, no, we... or other places, because after all, Alabama was only fifth with 22,915 cases, or 502.8 cases per 100,000 people. I'll take the penicillin for $1,000, Vanna. Number four, New Mexico. Number three, South Carolina. Number two, Mississippi. And another Republican state. Number one, Alaska. You know, I kind of understand Alaska. It stays dark up there a lot. I mean, you know, how can you tell? Gonorrhea. Gonorrhea. Another dandy. Gonorrhea, number five. Why, look, we're back in the Old South again. We're back in the land of fundamentalists. Why, we're back in the state where the governor prays for rain. Sonny Perdue, governor of Georgia, and number five on the gonorrhea hit parade is Georgia. Number four, Alabama. Number three, Louisiana. Come on down, Louisiana. Number two, ha, there they are again, South Carolina. And number one, Mississippi. Now, syphilis. Okie dokie. Number five. This might come as a surprise, but it is, after all, well, Maryland. Number four. You'd rather expect this? Nevada. Plenty of Republicans in Nevada. Number three. Hey, look, it's Sonny Perdue again. Come on down, get your little trophy, Sonny, because Georgia is number three for syphilis. Number two, Alabama. Come on down, Governor Bob Riley. You fundamentalist Baptist, you. Come on down and get your trophy for having the second highest syphilis rate in the nation. And number one, Louisiana. Jeepers. Are you surprised? Huh. I mean, far greater population densities in places like Philadelphia, New York City, Chicago, L.A. You know, L.A.'s just full of them brown people, them Mexicans that people like Tom Tancredo hate so much. Betcha he would have expected all those diseases to be concentrated where the people he hates are. Not amongst his fundamentalist brethren and sistren. But no, no, no. In states where government takes a proactive response instead of just burying its head in the sand and pretending that young people don't have sex, because, you know, clearly the statistics indicate that this is a function of ignorance. The 15 to 19 year olds. The kids who have never been allowed to be told in school that you gotta rap the rascal. Other states, they talk about that kind of thing. But not in genteel South Carolina, or decent and dignified Alabama, or Mississippi. Nope, we'll just let the brain rotting, never mind. But, hey, look, you know, it's what they want. This is what they want. When fundamentalists talk about objecting to talking about sex in schools and teaching about the human body in school and human body functions in school, this is what they are telling you that they want. Not that they would ever admit that their precious little darling has come home and told them, you know, she's got it. Or that little Junior has come home and asked that seminal question just posed by the late, great Frank Zappa, to wit, why does it hurt when I pee? Because we're fundamentalists. We're just not capable of talking about it. We'll pray over it, all right? We'll lay hands. No, I ain't going to lay my hands on it because I don't want to get to two. Dear Jesus. Oh, I have a feeling we're going to have fun with prayer meeting tonight. Let's go to the phones and see who's on the line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good Lord, do you have it going on tonight?
I got it fired up, Jim.
Well, you must have a bee in your bonnet somewhere. Well, look, as far as Sonny Perdue is concerned, if he wants to get on a carpet the size of, I don't know, whatever, a caravan or whatever, and pray, or if he wants to do that, that doesn't bother me. It doesn't make me feel insecure. Let him do it. That's fine. That's his right.
Yeah, it just makes him an idiot.
Yeah, I don't care. This is inconsequential to me. It really is, if he's going to do that. And as far as the sex thing is concerned, I know where you're coming from, okay? I do. And I know you don't support the ignorance and the belief system that endorses not having sex. But you do have to say this. If you don't do the boom boom, you're not going to get it off the toilet seat and nobody's going to get pregnant. I mean, that is, we're talking about 100% Fort Knox security. The trouble is, these people don't practice what they preach.
And they expect, to use the word, at the fundamental level, Jim, they expect human beings not to act like human beings.
Well, I'm fully aware of how human beings act, because I can tell you, in my youth, I've had some pretty embarrassing situations. But I've had to go to the doctor and get 2 million units over each hip, okay? It ain't no fun.
That's a loading dose.
I will never forget what I was told. Well, is it cystitis or is it the clap? And my dad said, well, son, go out in the back and you get a hold of 2 trees. If you pull up one, it's cystitis. So they both come up, it's the clap.
Wow. Your dad was a physician?
My father was a civil engineer, but he was he knew enough about the school of life to know about things like crabs, clap, syphilis, and that type of thing.
And he had the common decency to talk with you about it.
Yeah, we sure did. You know, he said, look, but he did say, I'm going to tell you. He said, rubber's break. And he said, honestly and truly, Jim, he said, you know, the 100% way is just to wait, not to do it. That was just his generation, his school of thought. Of course, he didn't do it. But he felt that it was his duty to pass it on to his son, you know, and I can appreciate his point of view, and I respect it.
Well, look, I mean, that's the thing. It's a tough conversation to have. It's tough enough as it is without having fundamentalists who run the state government beating you over the head, telling you that it's, you know, it's sinful, it's a moral disgrace, to explain all of the story. You know, your dad didn't give you half of it. He told you the whole skinny.
I remember talking to a guy who had AIDS, okay? And he told me that he had used condoms and all this kinds of stuff. And I just asked him, I said, well, what kind of lubricant did you use with that condom? Vaseline. And I said, I didn't say it to him, and I said, well, that's too bad. But I thought to myself, dear God, no wonder, because Vaseline will destroy a condom. It'll dissolve it. No wonder you're sick. No wonder you got infected.
You know,
somebody obviously, and this man was an intelligent person, a highly intelligent person, well-educated. But he did not know enough to realize that when you use these methods like dental dams and condoms and latex, that if you use an oil-based type of lubricant, they're not going to hold up.
And of course,
this
is
all the way with this thing.
Some of this is fairly difficult to talk about.
Well, I don't find it difficult to talk about because it's life or death.
But there are a lot of people who do, Jim, and that's why there is a place for educational systems to talk about it, for it to be talked about in a circumstance where you can keep the giggling and the tittering to a minimum?
I tell you, Bob, if I were a teacher, well, I was a teacher, but if I were still a teacher and I were having to deal with health or sex or whatever they're going to bring this thing under, I would tell those kids the best way
is not don't
have any of these problems is to refrain, to be absent. But if you must, and if your biological urges do get the best of you, as they will, I love my wife, but are you kidding, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Then I would tell them in the most explicit yet delicate way of what they've got to do and how they've got to keep from getting pregnant or keep from passing on something to one another that could kill them.
And see, these fundamentalist governments down south, Jim, have made it certain that that second half of the equation that you just described cannot happen in any public institution of learning, be it elementary school, junior high school, or college.
Well, that's just crazy.
But that's what's happened since the fundamentalists have taken over this nation.
I mean, here's the thing. I mean, in days of old, I mean, you know, let's face it, you could either go to the drugstore and get some A200 for your crabs, or you could get antibiotics for your chlamydia, your clap, or your syphilis. I mean, you could do that. But now we're dealing with a whole different plateau of a disease.
Children can die.
And, you know, the result eventually will be, at the very best, a severe attenuation of your lifestyle, if not your life expectancy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing that people need to realize, and that's, you know, in Africa, it's just out of complete control. And this is one reason.
And the rates are back on the rise in this country, according to something I just read.
Because people have gotten the idea, and I'm not sure which groups it is among. I think it's on the rise among. Is it? I know it is in African Americans.
It's on the rise in the heterosexual population. It's on the rise across the board.
Yeah, there is. I mean, you know, in his
book. And see, bear in mind, I mean, you know, I mean, I talk about them frequently on the show, Jim. I've got kids, right? I got four of them.
Right, absolutely.
And with each one of them, since they were educated in the state of West Virginia, and this just drives me nuts, every year, from the moment that each of them entered the fifth grade, we have had to sign a statement every year, not opting out, but opting our children in to health and sex education. Parents in this state have a right.
You mean the sexual climate in this state is very antediluvian?
Well, it is that, but it's even more frightening than that, Jim, because parents in this state have a right, and it drives me nuts because it's their kids that might be infecting my kids. They have a right to make sure that little Johnny and Janie fundamentalist don't ever hear anything about the nature of the human reproductive system, about disease transmission, about, you know, basically any health science that has taken place since 1950.
Well, don't these parents to be fundamentalists have a talk with their children about the birds and the bees?
Yes. God made the birds. God made the bees. Don't do it. And that's,
well,
you know, and that's what they get in their church. That's what they get in their homes. And that is what if they, you know, and they try it every year to ram it through the legislature to make sure that that's what goes on in our schools, to the point that we have to take affirmative steps to make sure that our children are actually given a complete educational experience in science class.
So these kids go around getting their birth control in the men's room of the Chevron station.
No, they don't get any at all. And they wind up with HIV, and they wind up with chlamydia.
Yeah.
And they wind up with syphilis, and they wind up with gonorrhea, and they give it to kids have sex. And they give it to the children who have sat in the classes and know better. You know, I talk about fundamentalism poisoning this country. It's infecting this country, and it's infecting it sexually, it's infecting it mentally, it's infecting it philosophically, and it is deadly.
Well, I'm not going to take you to task on any of those issues, that's for sure, but I can certainly understand the need for people to be educated and informed and to, you know, realize that if you cannot be abstinent, then you're going to have to pursue alternate or oblique strategies, which will involve contraception and other means of preventing the spread of unwanted pregnancy and possible fatal disease. I mean, you know, I mean, you've got to have, you're going to have to be practical. I think, what is the AIDS population now? Is it 40 million? I think it's over 40 million.
Yeah, up, if not back, higher.
Back in 1990, Randy Schiltz, before he died, in his book, which was, and he wrote two books, Condom and Becoming and The Band Played On. He did predict for right into the 21st century that the worldwide pandemic would surpass in either the middle or late 90s 40 million. He was right on target there.
Yeah, he
and,
was.
You know, it's just a, and it's really a horrible thing too, because when you see the effects of what this disease has done to people, and how it's just wiped out a whole generation of very intelligent people who would contribute to the arts and the sciences and other things as well, it is absolutely heartrending, because, you know, this stuff has been around so long.
Jim, I think I was listening to Peter's program, Strictly Confidential, the other night, and he mentioned that scientists have now said that...
Back in the 30s.
1939.
Could be. Could
you know,
be.
Is when the virus first made its foray into the human population. And that's just mind-boggling. But you see, Jim, the other side of this, and this isn't just about ranting about the dumbass fundamentalists, because, you know, they are, and we all know it, and there's not a lot of point to it. The question that I have to put to people is, how long are we going to pretend that these people are worthy of civilized debate? When are we going to finally begin to look at these creationists, these New Earthers, these intelligent design people, these people who say abstinence and only, and you can't talk about anything else? When are we going to just look at them and say,
you can't kill them?
No, you can't kill them, but you can shut up. You can tell them to shut up, and to get out of the way and leave room for people who actually want to talk about solving the problem.
Well, you know, you can tell them to shut up, but they're not going to shut up. You know that. The only way that they're going to see the only way they're going to see fit to really see that what you're saying is true is to have a life experience of their own, I would guess. I don't know.
But the problem is, when they have a life experience of their own, it doesn't create a road to Damascus moment for them, Jim, because their mindset is such that they look up and they think that they are being visited with a plague because they have somehow offended God.
Okay, you've had a lot more experience with these kinds of people, certainly than I have. I really haven't had that much experience with people like that, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, most of these people,
you have talks about your background in this type of religion and stuff like that, and I never had that type of background, mm-hmm. You know, obviously. And it's a little bit harder for me to understand their mindset. But, I mean, you know, hey, it's a free country, and they're going to talk, and they're going to do, and they're going to say, and there's not a whole lot anybody can do about it until they decide to realize that, you know, maybe, hey, everybody is out of step but me, and that's not the case. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But we're going to have to get serious about it, Jim, or people are
going
to, you know, especially, you know, when you think about things like syphilis. But I've got a bunch of blinking lights here. Some of them might actually be callers instead of busy signals, so I'll roll on. Thank you, Jim. I do appreciate it.
Well, you have a good Thanksgiving, and, you know, good luck with your Tom Turkey.
I just hope I don't burn him up.
Well, don't do that. What did you say, you were going to boil him first?
No, I'm going to smoke him.
Well, all right.
I'm going to thaw him over gentle hickory smoke.
Well, be sure and take the contraceptive off of him, okay?
Well, yeah, that's kind of job one. Thanks, Jim. Take care. Bye. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Bye now. I tell you what, let's take a quick break. Nah, let's not. Let's keep going. Let's see if any of these are actually phone calls. Nope, you're a busy signal. Hey, who I got?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Who is this?
Kevin.
Hey, Kevin. Happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
How you doing?
I'm okay.
First of all, what we need to do is stop subsidizing these fundamentalists, having them start paying their taxes.
Right. And stop subsidizing their little money-sucking scams to teach things like abstinence only.
Exactly. You know, I grew up, I don't know if I share this, I grew up Episcopalian, and I guess it was just my church, but my church also did have a sex education workshop for the young adults,
mm-hmm.
for teens and young adults. And, you know, it was pretty, looking back at it, it was pretty graphic, but basically, and this was a professional sex educator, basically, her statement was, sex is a and this is one thing the fundamentals need to understand, sex is a natural part of life. It's a basic human need. It's right up there with breathing, drinking water, going to the bathroom, and eating. You may not need it as much to live as those things, but it's still an emotional, physical intimacy is an emotional human need. Plain and simple.
Yeah, and to kid, I don't know how to get at this, Kevin. This is a more complicated world, I suppose, than the world, and at least you can make the argument, than the world of 10,000 years ago where it was all hunting and gathering, even though study after study has shown that hunter-gatherers actually had more leisure time than you and I do.
Yeah.
But life, you know, an old man 10,000 years ago was 40.
Mm-hmm.
People live longer, but they still mature sexually at the same rates, and because of all the crap that we put into our world, things like phytoestrogens, they mature. They're sexually maturing younger and younger and younger. It's been identified in the medical literature as something called precocious puberty.
Oh yeah, in Puerto Rico, it was very common. I heard because you know. They said that there was an area in Puerto Rico where women were developing breasts as early as 8.
Yeah.
And
as a consequence of that, with sexual maturity does not come cerebral maturity or physical maturity. It's a throwback to our evolutionary needs from a bygone era.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, because we're dealing with children here, you have to teach them about it, or they're going to go out and try to figure it out on their own. Babies figure things out by sticking fingers in light sockets if you don't cover up the light socket. If we can urge parents to put a little plate on top of an open light the power socket, why can't we urge them to do the same thing or teach their children to do the same thing with their genitals? Surely to God, something that can kill a child, as opposed to just give him a nasty shock, is worth addressing.
Like I said, you know, the fundamentalist world do have issues, and they do have hang-ups with their sexuality. You know, they just do, and they, you know. But, like I said, you know, I love it every time one of them break, like the guy in the wetsuit with the apparatus up his bum. You know, I just love it.
Oh, I'm going to have to play that now, Kevin, now that you brought it up.
You know, to me, it's like, because there goes another one, regardless of how much you repress yourself, you know, the truth will always come out. It really does.
Yeah, and how pathetic it is.
Yeah, and you know it's sad because I think this would be a much more peaceful world if people were, you know, our friend from Idaho, Senator Craig.
Yes, wide stance.
Yeah, you know, it's like I almost feel sorry for him because his circles were just so anti-gay, and he couldn't lead the life that he wanted to. That they had to resort to this.
Yeah, and but the thing is, Kevin, beyond him, the number of people who can't love the way they want to do, who can't love who they want to, who can't be with whom they want to, because there are fundamentalists like Jerry Falwell, you know, now busily roasting in hell, or D. James Kennedy, also now busily roasting in hell, maybe being sodomized by little demons, if there's any justice at all. You know, those people were out there attacking other people over questions not of lust, not of animal instinct, but questions of love. And there has to be, if there is a hell, there has to be an especially hot and tormented place in the center of that space for people who attack people for trying to love.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem we have, Kevin, is that, you know, whether it's abstinence-only education or, as I said, intelligent design, or any of the other freakish stuff that the fundamentalists want to foist off on the American people, the problem is that we continue to dialogue with them as if they have something to say. We need to learn to treat them like the drunk old dude at the end of the bar that they are.
Yeah, well, again, as the drunk old boot at the end of the bar, if he's carrying a lot of cash, he doesn't become that drunk anymore.
Or he gets treated like he's not nearly as crazy as he sounds.
Exactly. Money does a lot of things. Money makes people better looking than they actually are, nicer than they actually are, and smarter than they actually are. And as long as these people are funding Republican congressmen, senators, and even Republican dog catchers, they will have a voice in this society. You know, you gotta understand, these people, they usually thrive on people who don't have a sense of belonging to anything. And, you know, one of the things I guess I was taught, first and foremost, is that regardless of whatever, your family will always love you and accept you. You will never have to go through any silly initiation rites or anything like that. Be part of this family. You're here, you're part of us, and you're one of us. And for me, I know this is why, you know, these cults or fundamentalists, they thrive on college campuses when these kids are very vulnerable because they're away from home for the first time, and that's where they go. And they usually, a lot of these people end up going to these things or becoming part of these things in their college years, or being heavily influenced in their college years.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's the first time you're away from home, you know, you're physically mature, but mentally you're still a child, you know, you're kind of going through that, and you don't have a sense of, unfortunately, you know, I guess the war in the middle class has been declared so badly that, you know, a lot of parents don't have the time to be parents to remind them, you know, this is your family. Your family.
And yet we're having a reasonable conversation about this, Kevin. At the same time, I can guarantee you, this being a Wednesday, somewhere in the state of Alabama, they're having Wednesday night prayer meeting at the Busted Knuckle First Independent Holiness Sanctuary for Herpetological Worship and Cyanide Drinking Baptist Church. And they're citing this same report as evidence of the cultural decay of this here nation. It's the secular liberals who have brought this disease upon us. I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, going back to what I was saying, the thing is, a lot of these organizations make people alienate their families.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, the church becomes your family, or the so-called, you know, because, like I said, I don't even call them churches. I call them businesses. You know, to me...
Well, that's why I call it the religion industry, Kevin.
Yeah. You know, I know what a church is because I think I grew up in a church. A church is more of a community organization, which doesn't monopolize your life. You know, you do what you can, and they're usually grateful, and you give what you can, and they're usually grateful and appreciative. It's really, the focus is on one thing. And they're not looking to dominate or control your life. And, you know, like I said, you and I disagree because I still do believe in God.
Well, no. Careful there, Kevin. You're making some assumptions about me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I mean, you're not alone. Mark Levine has decided that I'm, you know, the Horn's great atheist. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, okay. Well, maybe.
But I just.
What a hide.
I refuse to pretend that any answers that I have found for myself are sufficient to serve as answers for other people.
Oh, well, absolutely, and it shouldn't be that way. Matter of fact, it's written in the Bible, you know. It shouldn't be that way. And, you know, it's like as I've become older, you know, I've become more spiritual and other things, and like I said, your definition of spirituality and my definition are two different universes.
Yeah, I mean, I can come up with a great big list of things that I think don't matter, but that's because they don't matter for me. Eating a little, a really, really bland, boring, tasteless, flavorless little salt, the saltine, and thinking it puts me in touch with the deity, you know, I think that's BS. And the same thing for the swig of grape juice.
But, I would say that's more of a ceremonial, and it's, you know, reenactment.
Hey, there's a religion out there that thinks that turns into Jesus meat in your little tummy, Kevin, and then that's just crazy. That's just nuts.
Yeah, well, I like to think it's more out of reverence for the Jewish faith.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the book says do this in remembrance of me, not do this because it turns you into a cannibal.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, it's the craziness isn't limited to that. The whole bit. You know, when you get into the business of counting angels on pinheads, you've missed the point.
Oh yeah. Well, a lot of that stuff, I don't even buy into it. But you know, like I said, I don't want to have a religious pissing contest. That's not me. But like I said,
nor would I ever. Nor would I ever. Yeah.
Exactly. But like people nowadays, I have enough confidence in myself. When people come up to me and say if I'm safe, I say yes, I am. And you know, and because when they ask you that question, it's usually code. Are you going to my church, though?
Yeah, it's code for are you a fundamentalist?
No, it's code. Not even a fundamentalist. It's code if you're going to my church.
Saved, born again.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I really resent, and it's one of the very few things that I truly resent about the presidency of Jimmy Carter, is that hateful phrase got injected into the cultural discussion.
Exactly.
When he said that he was.
Yeah. And we haven't recovered from it since.
No, we haven't. We haven't.
Yeah. Even though Carter was an honorable man. And what do you mean was? He is an honorable man. I thank God every day. He's living long enough to see him vindicated for a lot of things. You know. I thank God every day.
And every day vindicates him just a little bit more, Kevin.
More. Okay. Yeah, exactly. He's living long enough to see himself vindicated. You know, now, hopefully, another miracle will happen on December 10th and Gore will announce his presidency. I just want to throw that in because I have a feeling that's when it's going to happen.
Why December 10th?
That's when he gets the Nobel Prize. Physically gets the prize.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that's where...
I thought there was maybe some sort of fundraising thing or federal election law deadline.
No, but the stage for him to make the announcement will be physically there if he's going to...
Oh, so yeah, so he'll be, yeah, I get it. He'll be there on the stage in Oslo and make his, okay.
Yeah.
I don't share your optimism. I would not grieve if he did it. I would be extremely happy if he did it.
In honor of the Wednesday prayer meeting, I am praying for a miracle. I'm going to be, and hopefully a lot of people out there will be praying for that miracle. If not, he could pull an Eisenhower and just throw his hat in on there. You know, that could be another option.
True. Yeah. Well, yeah, Kevin, I appreciate it a lot, and all set for Thanksgiving?
As soon as I need to be, I'm going over to relatives.
Are you taking a covered dish or anything, or are you just going to sit back? And
my mother is, of course. I just will make sure there's cranberry there. there's ample cranberry.
Good deal.
One without the other. Okay. God bless you and everyone.
You take care and a very happy feast, and I hope it's a wonderful family get together.
It will be. It will be.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, bye.
Take care. Talk to you soon. And let's see if there's somebody on this line. Nope, you're a busy signal. I don't know. I wonder sometimes if I'm getting the point across. And look, I'll tell you, I'm confident. I think, at least for my purposes, I'm at peace with the universe. Except for, winning the Powerball. But a lot of people aren't. And those are the people who get suckered in by organized religion, whatever religion it is. Whether it be some variation of Christianity, whether it be fundamentalism, and fundamentalism of any stripe, be it Islam, be it Christianity. Is there fundamentalist Hinduism, fundamentalist Buddhism? I put them in the same bag. But history teaches us that organized religion becomes a means of controlling other human beings. Anytime you're going to find a connection with God, the universe, Yahweh, Allah, the Buddha nature, the flying spaghetti monster, anytime you're going to find that connection, it's going to be a personal connection, and nobody in no suit, no uniform, can find it for you or tell you how to get there. It is a lonely search that you must take for yourself, isn't it? At least, that's the best that I've been able to figure out. There's no magic. There is, as was it Plato or Socrates? Maybe it was Aristotle that said there is no royal road to geometry. Nope, sure isn't. No royal road to salvation either. Nonetheless, people selling that, hustling that, amass vast amounts of money, pump it into state governments in places where they think the populace will be particularly susceptible, and go about ensuring that children can't find out about condoms, or, to use the previous example, that you can't use a petroleum-based lubricant and a condom at the same time. It would seem like elementary stuff. It is elementary stuff. It's the kind of elementary stuff that should be taught in elementary school. Really. So, that's just seems to make sense to me. But that's not all we have for prayer meeting tonight. No, we've got much, much more. And we'll hit it all when we come back. And don't forget, a little bit of Thanksgiving Eve fun and frivolity. We'll also continue a tradition to close the show about, 20 minutes until 9 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll fire up the one and the only Arlo Guthrie with Alice's Restaurant, which used to just be a really cute little song until all the garbage that if you're familiar with the song, all the garbage with which that song deals came roaring back to life when we decided to start a war that we had no business in. So the last portion of the program, we'll run out with Arlo Guthrie and Alice's Restaurant. Coming up right now, however, the news. After the news, more of your phone calls to 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll free. If you've got your own plan, and you can save us a buck or two, 304-658-5453. Or email to bob@headonradio.com. It all works equally well. We'll be right back, right here on America's independently operated liberal voice. America's listener-supported liberal voice. The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's only gonna go to waste. We're not really being rude. But the good stuff's in his closet. I swear he wouldn't mind. Hell, we'll just shoot the lock off. I do it all the time. The gypsy's in the paddock. He's left us here alone. The order of sleepless nights will now through the dawn. We ain't got no money. We ain't got no rights. So the gypsy's in the paddock. We got it all tonight. There's damsels in distress up there. We got all this beer. They'll free them from their condo. Bring them over here. We'll show them his gold records. Plays the music loud. We'll party just like Bubba does. We'll do the old man proud. We're gypsies in the palace. There ain't no wrong or right. We're gypsies in the palace. And of course, wild tonight. He's the greatest guy to work for.
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf may leave his military post as soon as this weekend, according to a top government official. He will then take the presidential oath as a civilian, satisfying a key directive by Western powers, including the White House. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says while she is looking forward to next week's Middle Eastern Peace Conference in Annapolis, Maryland, she is cautious about expecting too much from a fragile diplomacy. World powers will gather to promote a peace deal between the Israelis and Palestinians in order to gain some stability in the war-torn Middle East. Thousands of displaced Iraqis have begun returning to their homes, according to the BBC. An estimated 1,000 Iraqis make it back home daily because of a drop in violence, improved security, and incentives from the Iraqi government. In Bangladesh, shelters and rescue camps are overrun with victims of the country's worst storm in a decade. Food and water are running out, more bodies are being discovered, thousands remain missing. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown apologized to the public today for a security breach affecting an estimated 25 million people across the United Kingdom. Two computer disks containing bank account and personal information are lost in the largest breach of security of its kind in Europe. Airports and train stations across the U.S. are packed with travelers today. A record 39 million Americans expected to travel at least 50 miles this Thanksgiving holiday. Ending months of speculation, officials with the state of New Hampshire announcing that their presidential primary will be held on January 8th. Iowa's caucuses have led the way for several decades, but New Hampshire has had the initial primary for even longer, since 1920. The announcement comes on the heels of Michigan State's decision to hold their primary on January 15th. The French government and striking transit workers back at the bargaining table today, that despite early morning sabotage on the country's high-speed rail lines. The strike has crippled France, costing the economy an estimated $500 million per day. Also in Japan, thousands of civilian workers on U.S. military bases striking today to protest a 10% pay cut. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll look at science and business news just ahead. But first, this message.
Remember when the name on the door said it all? In today's world, it's the website that defines a company's image. For better or worse, a company's presence on the internet is a vital factor in how it keeps existing customers and attracts new clients. Byte Technology of Monterey is a leader in a new approach to web design. Byte designs a new site based on the mission, purpose, character, and indeed the energy of their clients. Byte is particularly successful in presenting their client's name to the global internet community because they approach the design with a clear, defined process. By fully understanding the client's business, motivation, and operation, they are able to translate the company's critical values into the new website. In addition to original design, Byte works with clients to update their website to reflect changes in target markets, products and services, and the business climate. Byte Technology. See what they're about at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
University researchers say they've mapped the genetic code for two strains of drug-resistant tuberculosis. Doctors say understanding the way mutations work will assist in the effort to improve treatment of the disease. According to the Calorie Control Council, on Thanksgiving Day, the average American eats 4,500 calories and nearly 230 grams of fat. Centers for Disease Control, meantime, report that American adults are exercising more. However, there is still room for more improvement, according to the particular study. Freddie Mac announcing a massive quarterly net loss of $2.03 billion. The government-sponsored mortgage company saying it was forced to set aside $1.2 billion to pay for home loans gone sour. Construction of single-family homes fell last month to a 16-year low. Commerce Department reporting a significant boost, though, in construction of apartments. Shares of Office Depot falling 6% after it's announced its quarterly profit fell by 9%. World's largest office supply company deciding reduced consumer spending and the housing slump for the decline. Light sweet crude trading at $97.29 a barrel. Gold at $798.60 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average plunging once again to close at 12,799. Always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, so let's go around again, and let's not waste any time shilly-shallying, dilly-dallying, or otherwise fooling about. We'll leave that to the syphilitic fundamentalists. On the phone, we have our good friend David calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
And to you, too.
Yeah. I was listening to what you were saying about fundamentalism. And what people believe, and what people want you to believe, and all everything in between. And to me, I think of it as a larger issue. To me, is once you step to that level, and this is similar to what I say about conservatism too, and also people who have studied and went one way, and they don't want to be looked at as fools. They don't want to look to be as gullible. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be looked at as naive and silly. So they're going to stay with their position no matter what the consequences are. And that's the way I look at everything and what it comes from the right.
And beyond that, though, David, it's what happens. Even if they're confronted with the wrongness of their position, they will do anything rather to avoid confronting the fact that they are just dead wrong. God's mad at me, so, you know, God gave me gonorrhea. You know, God's mad at me, so God made me have a car wreck. I forget who it was that was on the show one evening and pointed out that every time fundamentalists see something that poses a problem for them, that they try to eliminate it for the rest of us. Gambling is a case in point. Liquor, drugs, dirty magazines, so to speak, how people choose to have sex. Look at the business with gay marriage is an attack on the traditional family. You know, there's no traditional families are going to break up if a couple of guys can pick out a China pattern.
You know, Bob, when people, I think people have a hard time understanding why it is people act like this, and I guess I could explain it to people this way. When you don't have that much to be defiant about, when you're in a comfortable position, or when you are in an insulated position from the outside of the world, you need to find something to be defiant about, and that's what they're choosing. And I really think in a lot of cases, a lot of people don't really mean what they say. They just really want to be defiant about something and get emotional and have someone react to something, whether it's in a negative way or if they see it a positive. Whichever way, they just want a reaction and attention, really.
It's certainly attention-based. There's no getting around that.
It is.
It's infantile.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody, you know, the same crowd that needs to believe that the world was that grass was created before the sunlight that nourishes it. The same crowd that believes that the Earth is just slightly younger than the recipe for beer, for heaven's sakes. Is a childish crowd. They are childlike. They are mentally deficient, and I don't mind saying it. You know, I've had people say, you know, Bob, that's intolerant. No,
yeah.
It's not. It is not intolerant to say that certain people don't belong in certain discussions because they do not have the mental acuity to participate. You know, I don't invite my children into discussions about things of adult import. You know, there's even a Bible verse to support it. It's something along the lines of, "When I was a child, I spake as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things."
Yeah.
You know, you can't invite people who believe that God sends plagues onto individuals to talk about questions of public health.
I understand that, and at the same time, though. Like I said, these people have what they've been raised in, what they've been disciplined under. I don't know what I would be like if I had. I'm not even going to begin to guess. I see it all the time on a lot of these YouTube videos. A lot of people put up a lot of these Christian YouTube videos and talk about who needs to be saved and all of this, and you listen to them respond back and forth, and it's like there is no doubt in what they say. This is the way, but. With that comes something that I think a lot of people should realize. If there is no doubt, then why are they saying it so much? There must be this little voice in their head that says, you know, you could be wrong, so you might as well state your position one more time.
Yeah, just to make, you know, just in case you can con one more human being in.
Yeah, just or you can look at it as just because... maybe if I say it a little bit louder, I'll believe it a little bit more today.
Yeah. Well, if you keep hollering it loudly enough, and you know, that's the history of organized Christianity. You know, they just invented a Trinity and hollered Trinity long enough and put it and made it part of the power structure until the Trinity took hold.
Yeah.
It certainly doesn't exist in the Bible. Doctrinally, or as any manifestation of reality, you know, the same thing with the virginity of Mary. You know, St. Paul never mentions it. Saint, you know, please. Saul of Tarsus, the half-insane tent maker who huffed a few too many fumes, doesn't mention it.
You know, one of the things that people don't realize, I sent you a link to This Film Is Not Yet Rated, the trailer, of course.
Yeah,
that's going to be that's what I'm going to say after everything. And you know what's great about that film? For those who haven't seen it, it does delve into religion a bit as well, and the religious control that the MPAA has. Now, a lot of people say what? Well, the MPAA, and they reveal it in the movie, Bob, and I found this interesting is they have two clergymen always. Who are reviewing all of the films that come in, no matter what they are. Try to wrap your head around that one. Why are they there? And then you think about the movies that they accepted and greenlighted to be R, and then they... And see, this is another thing that people don't realize. A lot of movies rest... When you watch the movie, Bob, you'll see the story of Jack Valenti, and you'll see his rise to power, and you'll see these interviews that they cut together. But the amazing thing about the film, to me, of This Film Is Not Yet Rated, is it goes beneath the surface and it tells you, it shows you the religious doctrine that people are missing that is in the MPAA, the little subtle messages that they put out to the people, the fact that they don't want to reveal their board members and how they how they shroud them in secrecy constantly. And there really is no answer why they shroud them in secret constantly other than fear, and they realize that they're not doing the right thing when it comes to art and expression and creativity. And the interesting thing about it is, though, is what they talk about in the movies that they see as blasphemous, and the notes that they make, like they talk about those scenes that might be offensive to Catholics, might be offensive to Christians, and then they go on and on. There's like an interview with the chairwoman, and they ask about, like, why didn't this get, and they ask specific questions that you never get to ask. And the great thing about the film, and this is why I recommend it to everyone, is because they lift the veil finally, and you get to see the faces of the MPAA. You get to see the religious indoctrination. You get to see...
Well, you get to see how the Hays Commission, which was run by religious freaks, got driven underground and then just sort of bubbled up as the MPAA, and everybody thought the Hays Commission was gone.
But, I mean, people will be shocked you'll be shocked, Bob, when you watch this film, how far they got. They got all the list. You see the faces you see the faces, and you see the actual laws and rules that they put in place in the book of the MPA. It's insane. I'll tell you this, and this will give you an example of how messed up this organization is. They have more secrecy of who's in their organization as much as the CIA.
Jeez.
And when you watch it, Bob, you'd just be laughing because you'd be like, oh, my God, they lied about the age groups, too? They lie about everything. They don't follow any of these rules. No wonder they don't want anyone to know. And they have, like, you know, they have it so when you come to get your movie reviewed and you walk in, like, you're a producer of film, you can't see the clergyman, but they can see you.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's that kind of craziness, like, and you'll be asking yourself, why does this person have to review my movie? Like, they talk about what they found offensive with Hilary Swank's movie, where she was playing a guy.
Yeah.
And you can see why they would want to make that film an NC-17. You get to see one of the interesting things they do is they take all of the offensive scenes and they collage it together of what the MPAA was very objective about and made into an NC-17. It's a really exhaustive type of documentary, and I really recommend it to everyone. And and what's really revealing is in the beginning, they tell you something that I didn't know previously. Blockbuster does not do NC-17. So therefore, this film is not yet rated because they used those brief clips and snippets of scenes that turned into NC-17, and also it was against Blockbuster's rules and regulations, and also had ties with of the group that they were going after. That's another thing. You start to see all the video chain stores that are tied to the DVD and the film rating system. It's really a powerful film.
It's all information management, isn't it?
Yes. And one last thing before I go, I really think we should talk about it sometime. Is we really need to start talking about that Fifth Fleet in Iran. The reason why we need to start talking about that is because I see all the distractions that are happening right now in terms of the news. I see, you know, some people mentioning it, but I would really like to see maybe some Navy personnel, some people come forward and get their thoughts and feedback on that situation of a whole damn 5,000 people just stuck right on the border, right on the line of Iran
and waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Sunburn cruise missiles and their Yakounts, those kind of cruise missiles that they have. And I would just like to get their take on this. And maybe if someone's listening who is in the Navy, maybe you know someone who knows someone who knows someone who was on that ship. I think it's important we need to talk about it. And if it happens and it's the new Pearl Harbor, we should at least be on the ball and talk about something like this before it happens. And I just wanted to bring that up, and hopefully we can have a more in-depth discussion on it, because I think it is getting sidetracked a bit.
There is every reason to believe that the Bush administration will roll out their war with Iran sometime. Well, how many times do I have to say it? And I mean, I'm not gooning on you, David. You know that.
Yeah.
How many times do I have to say it? These people haven't had a new idea in their entire existence. And as a consequence of that, there is no reason to expect that they won't do Iran on the same basic template with which they did Iraq. They can't start the war in June. They can't do it in August because that would be too obvious, and it's right smack dab in the middle of the political conventions.
Yeah.
They can't. And, you know, it was Rove himself who said you don't roll out new product in August. We will see the war with Iran sometime around between March and May of 2008. I'm not going to do lead pipe cinch or, you know, I'll march naked down Main Street over it or anything if it doesn't happen. But I'm confident. I'm confident. And that's one of the frustrating things is I can't, you know, I write my congressmen, I write my senators, and I'm not a crank. I patiently explain to them that the only way to derail this plan is to impeach them.
I wonder how many people understand about the significance of the Fifth Fleet being smack dab right in there. It's like a bad game of Battleship.
Yeah,
all the pieces are lined up.
Yeah, and if all the pieces are lined up and something awful happens, then, you know, it'll be the same kind of inquiry that we had after Pearl Harbor. You know, how could you guys let this happen? You know, you just park all the battleships in a nice, convenient little row so they can get whacked.
Yeah.
But it won't be their fault. I mean, really, they're following orders. We've got the better than half of the United States Navy between the tip of India and the northern end of the Persian Gulf.
I'd really like to be one of those fly on the walls in a lot of these cabinet members in terms of senators and congressmen, and when they're having their daily meetings, and see if some of the people with a conscience talk about this, because I think I've heard Dennis Kucinich, he's one of the only people that I've heard him mention it. Maybe Murtha mentioned it in passing, but again, I mean,
Biden said at the last debate, you know, if he starts a war with Iran, impeach him.
Yeah.
But that's a classic case of closing the barn door when the horse is gone and the barn's on fire.
I wonder if a lot of people are afraid to bring up the Fifth Fleet now. It's
I don't think that they're afraid to. They just don't know, David.
Yeah.
I mean, God knows Katie Couric's not covering it.
And that brings an interesting question. How do you get people that are on a higher plateau to be in the know if they don't want to be in the know? That's the ultimate question.
Willful ignorance. And I don't know that there's an answer to it.
Yeah.
Hey, David, I got a blink in here. I don't know if there's a person on it or not, but I want to find out.
Well, Bob, all I got to say is check out the Martian Child movie with John Cusack, too. It's pretty good.
Okay, cool. I will.
All right, later.
Later, David.
Peace.
Bye now. Happy Thanksgiving. And, gosh, I hope you're still here. Hey, who have I got?
Hello, Bob. It's Michelle.
Michelle, how are you, dear?
I'm doing okay. It's kind of ironic. It seems like I call after David, you know, a lot of times. David and I.
Don't try to con me. You guys are working this stuff out.
I'll call him up and say, David, call him. So I can call, and he'll be like deja vu.
Right.
So, what documentary was David talking? I've seen advertisements for it on Sundance, but with the
this film has not been rated.
Ah, yeah.
And it sounds like a dandy. I mean, I love that kind of thing.
I didn't know it was out. I don't go to the movie theaters. I just sickened by the commercials. I just really have a hard time sitting through all the commercials. You know, even if you don't, you know, you have to get there to at least try to get a decent seat where your neck's not kinked, you know.
Well, it's a simple matter of economics here, because at $7 or $8 a ticket, now that, you know, because you have to pay adult prices at the movie theater
once
the children are, you know, a year and a half.
Crawling.
Yeah, no longer crawling. So at $8 a ticket and gas to get over to the, because, you know, the day of the local movie house, that one's gone too. So
oh,
it's
yeah.
a it's
yeah.
an 80 it's an 80 mile round trip to the movies. It's $8 a ticket. And, you know, you like to stop for a bite to eat, and hell, if you take a family my size to, God forbid, McDonald's, you're into $40 there. So let's see.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's a $120 night to go see a movie that is too much of a crapshoot to take the risk.
Yeah, I'm not much of.
And God and heaven only knows, Michelle, I can't remember the last time I had a night out with my wife. Kind of sad,
you guys,
but true.
Really need that, don't you?
Oh, in a bad way, sure. We need every couple, no matter how many kids, needs an opportunity to remember that there was a reason that they liked each other in the first place, and that's how the kids happened.
Yeah, and you know, it's really hard. I mean, that's a good subject. It's really hard to be in a monogamous relationship, and they don't tell you that. Your parents don't tell you that, and.
At this point, I don't think to be honest, at this point, I don't think Agnes and I are in a monogamous relationship. Agnes and I are in a non-ogamous relationship. You know,
passing in the hall.
I never told the story, Michelle, but the last time that we tried to have any time alone, you got to understand, this is a 75-year-old house, okay? And the door locks and the doorknobs are still those old skeleton key kinds of locks.
Oh, my God.
Agnes found the key that fits our bedroom door.
Mm.
So, you know, she walks in the room. She closes the door behind her. She gives me that look.
Uh-huh.
You know the look.
The wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Turns around, puts the key in the door, goes click. And... you know, the kids were, like, out of the house playing. You know, we're sitting there. We're like teenagers, terrified of getting caught.
Oh, yeah.
And all is said and done, and she goes to open the unlock the door and walk, and we're locked in. And the lock is frozen. And we're trapped in our own bedroom.
Meanwhile, the kids are killing one another outside.
Or you know, standing outside the door going, what are you two doing? You know, because we got some pretty savvy kids.
Yeah.
So my son-in-law winds up, he stands outside the bedroom window. I slide the double hung window up. He removes the air conditioner.
Oh, no.
Crawls through the window, takes a pry bar. Well, first we took off the, we took the pins out of the hinges.
Right, right.
But the door wouldn't come off that way. So we put the pins back in the hinges, and he takes a pry bar and pries the facing off of the wall so that he can then get in and force the deadbolt to move back. Like I said, it would screenplay up.
God.
It would screenplay up as an episode from Love American Style. It really would.
Yeah, it would give reason for that.
You know, Harvey Korman could play me.
You know, I have to tell you, when because my husband, he has two children from his first marriage, and I have one. So together we make three.
Mm-hmm.
And his children every other weekend were with their mother. And then we had little Elizabeth, you know. When we got together, she was 2 and a half. So on those weekends the kids were gone, you know, with their mom, we had to figure something out. We don't have any family, mind you, in Southern California to, you know, take care of the kids. So we'd tell her, oh, go have a popsicle. Now it's kind of a joke that she's finally catching.
Hey, kid, go have a popsicle.
Yeah, even though nothing happens, we just like saying it.
I know, but yes, absolutely. But, yeah. You know, I love the merry little life that we lead. It's just, you know, like I said, at this point, it's non-ogamous. I think I've invented a new word now.
I think it's good material. I really do. I think that, you know, when you really need to bust gut, You know, all you got to do is go back on that material of the married life, the family life, the Thanksgiving dinner from hell. You know, if we can look at that, then that will help us to survive what we all, you know, like I was saying in the chat room that I was really depressed because in the past day I've watched, last night I watched the, I think it was not Nightline, but it's PBS's.
Frontline?
Yeah, Frontline, thank you. I watched that on Defar, Defer, I don't know how they pronounce it. And then today I watched the documentary on PETA, and also, what was the other one that I can't remember, but I'm just, you know, I'm like, okay, this is, I need some material, you know, I need to reflect on my material. And, you know, and then it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and I'm thinking, you know, yes, we all have to be heterosexual families and live with one mate all of our life, and that's the way it should be, and life is just bliss, and, you know, and meanwhile everybody's abusing, and then you're talking about the STIs now, they call them, you know, sexually transmitted infections. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know they weren't diseases anymore.
No, they're called infections. So, now what that does, I guess, is, that's new to me. I heard it from a Planned Parenthood affiliate, or a person affiliated with Planned Parenthood.
Well, we have to keep up, by the way. Are we still on the nicotine wagon?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. And that 10 pounds, it's sticking to me like...
It gets welded on. Don't kid yourself.
Oh, my God. The only benefit is my husband's like, wow, your chest size has increased. Now, mind you, when we met, I looked like I was going through puberty because I weighed 110 pounds, you know. I was lean. Nobody would butcher me. But, you know, it's like, okay, now I'm understanding this age thing, you know. But, yeah, nicotine is no longer part of my life. I think about you often on that matter.
It's all I got left.
I know, but I have to tell you, I hate it. But I sure love breathing. Bob, I have to tell you that.
I know. I've quitting's easy. I've done it a million times.
Yeah. Oh,
and yeah, wonderful things happen when you do. For me, and you know, calling horn psychologist Dr. Rick Goodner. For me, it's when the nightmares kick in that I always lose
yeah.
it. And they always follow the same form, Michelle. It is, I'll have this dream and I'll be 10 years down the road. And there'll be a conversation going on, and somebody say, "Oh, Bob, that's great. You've quit smoking for 10 years." Yeah, I have. You know, I'm clean as a whistle. And somewhere in the course of the dream, I pick up a cigarette and light it.
Yeah. I just had that last night.
Okay. It's not just me then.
It's okay. It's been a while. You can have one.
And I wake up in a cold, ugly sweat. I hate, because in my dream, I just loathe myself.
Oh, you do?
Because it's like, darn, now I got to do this all over again, and I'm re-addicted. Damn it.
Right.
And you wake up, and you're kind of, you know, and it's like, oh, dang. Yeah. That.
You know, if anything, I just wish that I could get it across to people how non-compassionate our society has become in so many ways. But, you know, okay, we're talking about nicotine addiction. The apathy that society has about, well, you should just quit, you know, and how they're, you know, they just push it off as, you know, oh, you're weak and, you know, that's just a nasty habit. When they have no idea as their, you know, their credit card is maxed out because they have a shopping habit that, you know, they'll starve their kids, you know, so they can have those shoes, or, you know, what I'm saying is,
Yeah.
They're working out, and they're wearing that fashion makeup that you can work out, and you have to chisel it off, you know, afterwards. Or, you know, the guy's driving his Hummer, and you know, which is a name I never understood except, you know, being phallic.
That's mainly because it is.
And to see a woman driving a Hummer. Anyway, but yeah, it's just ironic. And then try to have a relationship, whatever it be, you know, same sex, opposite sex.
No sex.
Yeah, you know, it's just sex.
Yeah.
Trying to get that done. You know, you got to figure that into the...
You know, when it finally gets a place on the to-do list, then you know you're done.
Oh yeah.
Change the cat box, grocery shopping, get the garbage out, clean out the garage, have an intimate moment. Yeah. When it has to go on a list, no pun intended, you're screwed.
Well, you know, your oldest daughter, I enjoyed chatting with her in the chat room, and then...
No, she's a gem.
Phone. Why don't you have her host the night? And tell us all about, you know, you guys. And
no! No!
Oh. You'd have to perform.
No! What are you trying to do to me? Oh, yeah, what is...
I'm trying to help Agnes out.
Yeah, what is this, Pope Bob with a sharp stick night?
Oh, I miss you guys.
Well, you know, we're just so glad you're there.
Oh, I'm glad you guys are there. I love you. Do you have another call?
I got a couple stacked up. Three out of five are probably busy signals, but you know, that's my life. You know, no screener.
Well, we like that though. It's kind of like a game. You know, it's a gamble. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, in the room, everybody in the room. Let's start betting, okay? I'll put a nickel on that call's dropped. Or
all right, Michelle, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you soon.
Give them all hugs for me.
Sure will.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay. Is it a busy... okay, everybody got their bets down? Is it a busy signal? No, it's not a busy signal. Hey, who have I got?
Is it Twoo, Bob? Is it Twoo?
It's Twoo. It's Twoo.
It's Twoo. Is it really Twoo? I don't have much to say, but you know, and I don't mean to be offensive.
Oh, wait a minute, Jim. Wait a minute. Let's have it straight from the horse's mouth.
Oh, it's true. It's true. It's true. It's true.
Yep.
Oh, but she's so tired. So tired of being admired. Let's face it, I'm just tired.
You know, I wish I had the Love American style theme after... if Agnes gets wind of the fact that I've told that story, my life will not be worth a plugged nickel.
You know, I had a friend who had the exact... who had the precise answer to the thing about sex. And he just looked at me one day and he said, you know, one thing about masturbation, you certainly don't have to look your best.
What did Woody Allen say? I remember this. I remember the first time I ever had sex. I was alone at the time.
Yeah. You know, when you think about, I will never forget one episode of Roseanne when the little DJ was turned 13, and mm-hmm. he locked himself in the bathroom, and of course his sister Darlene comes in. And she said, "Well, DJ has finally found a friend that's not imaginary."
Oh, where is this show going? This was the Thanksgiving show. What have I done, Jim?
And then she said, well, he's been in there for an hour, which he's proved either he's real good at it or he's really bad at it. So, did a lot of stuff for a lot of people, I think. And I thought, you know, it did it in a good way. I love Roseanne. I know we're going, you know, skipping away from a lot of topics and stuff like that, but, you know, honestly and truly, that show did an awful lot to teach people about a lot of things. I mean, she was the blue-collar baby, and this, that, and the other. She could be crass and vulgar, and this, that, and the other. I just love her, and I still do. I still kick every episode that I can. I think I've seen every episode of that show at least 3 to 4 times. I'm a certified Rosenologist.
Yeah, that's where I am with the Andy Griffith Show.
Well, that's a little. Aunt Dee is a far cry from Roseanne, but nonetheless.
And God knows I can quote most of the lines that Jethro Bodine ever uttered. What we need is a little motivation. You know, I was just over on the Brando lot, and they're just swimming in it. That's what we need, motivation.
Absolutely. But, you know, I want to talk to you just about cigarettes for a second. That's
all right.
My love affair with nicotine. During the day, now, see if this isn't crazy. I have no desire to smoke at all. None. If I'm around somebody smoking a cigarette during the day, I have to get out of there. It makes me sick. But when it gets dark and the armies of the night begin to march, well, when you have a cocktail in one hand, well, guess what goes with that cocktail?
Oh, you're darn right.
And isn't that an odd thing? I have no desire to smoke during the day, do not smoke during the day, but at night, I will fire a couple of them up.
Well, I've got a, you know, the truth of the matter is, I've got a short list of when a smoke is really good. With a cup of coffee. After an intimate moment.
Yeah, well,
or several of them. Cigarettes and moments. And with a drink.
Well, absolutely. Like the three best things in the world. A cocktail before and a good cigarette after. So there it is. But anyway, I don't have much to add other than that. I'm just rambling here, but, the way that this thing was going, you were talking about cigarettes and talking about other urges that we have. I mean, you know, we're human. We do the best we can to control them. And, you know, nicotine addiction is a serious problem. It really is.
It is the most... I've never been... I mean, I freely acknowledge my addiction, and I've never known anything like it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this life that I have tried, and I've walked away from 99% of it.
Well, I quit for years. And the way I quit was I used Hall's Mental Mental Cough Drop.
My mother used Brock's Butterscotch Discs.
Well, there's something about that Hall's Mental Mental Cough or something.
To be fair, Jim, she used Brock's Butterscotch Discs and Malignant Breast Cancer. And that quit her off cigarettes in 1973, and she never, you know... now, and you know, occasionally I'd be around. She'd say, you know, that thing smells good.
Well, when my mother quit, she never started back. She always had to have a pack with her.
Well, my father went to his grave saying, you know, I want a cigarette a foot long.
Well, hey, look, you know, if you can make it to 80 or something like that, I think you're doing pretty damn good. You really are. I mean, we're only promised 3, 4, and 10. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like the old George Gerson thing. Methuselah lived 900 years, but who calls that living when no gal was given to no man with 900 years?
Well said, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Good night.
Bye now. Okay, two more blinking lights. Place your bets. The wheel goes round and round. Is it a busy signal? It's a busy signal. Let's try again. Oh, that looks like a person.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, is this Preston?
Yes, it is.
Hey, welcome to the program. Happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise, definitely.
I think I think the program's gotten a little bit silly, but we'll survive, maybe.
Silly is good. You were talking about cigarettes, and it made me think of a friend of mine who spent a year in Syria recently, and he brought back this big water pipe.
Called a hookah, yes.
Yeah. And he brought it by along with the kind of tobacco that they smoke in it, which is tobacco plus kind of like there's dried fruit in it.
Yeah, they blend all kinds of stuff in it, don't they?
Yeah, so you've tried it before.
Yes, I have. And it's amazing.
I thought it was real nice. I liked it a lot. The way they burn the tobacco, too, it's interesting. They don't put the flame right to the tobacco, but they heat up that, you know, they just get those coals going and kind of heat it up and almost
vaporize it, kind of like. I don't know. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Well,
you do that in a hookah, and frankly, if you're real persnickety about a cigar, you do the same thing. You never let the open flame actually touch the end of the cigar.
Okay.
Because there's, this is from the same obsessive compulsive crowd that makes a martini and talks about, you know, not shaking but stirring instead because you don't want to bruise the gin. I've never seen bruised gin, but you know, it certainly worked for me.
Okay. Interesting. Have you ever tried those kind of all natural, or they're called all natural cigarettes? I think they're called American Spirits.
I have on a number of occasions, and if I could afford them, that's all I'd smoke.
Okay.
But at $6 a pack, and considering the nature of my habit, it just doesn't happen. But they are kind enough to send me, I get a $10 coupon every month or so from them, and I run right out and use it to get two packs. And of course, it costs me an extra $2 because they're $6 a pack. But yeah, oh, that's wonderful stuff.
Okay.
And I don't smoke menthol cigarettes, but I've even tried those, and they're yummy. And they've got a flavor. Oh God, what is it? Perique. It's a fermented tobacco that's made in small batches in Louisiana. And they've got a blend for that that just is out of this world. If you're a smoker, boy, oh, I feel terrible now, Preston, because I'm encouraging people to smoke. Oh,
you know,
they're lighting up the barbecue pit in hell for me, Preston.
You know, it's something that human beings have been doing for quite a long time, and I think it has its place. I think it's a shame that so much of the tobacco is grown, well, that they put in all those chemicals, I guess dozens and dozens of chemicals these days.
Look, you can light up a typical over-the-counter cigarette, and you can light up a good Dominican or Honduran or even Cuban cigar. They don't even smell the same.
Okay. Yep.
Because they're not. What happens to create an American cigarette shouldn't happen to a dog. Because they take the tobacco, and they grind it down to powder, and they add all these vile chemicals into it, and they make it, well, it's like a paper making process.
Mm-hmm.
They make a paper out of it, and that's how they manipulate how much nicotine is in it, because they're manipulating your habit along the way.
Yeah.
And once they've made the paper, then they re-shred it and turn it into cigarettes, and that's why you can leave a cigarette burn in an ashtray, and it'll go and burn all the way down to the filter, while a cigar will go out, and so will one of those natural American Spirit cigarettes. They go out.
Yeah. Yeah. I just recently, I think in the past couple of years, some of the companies have put an additional spike of nicotine in their cigarettes.
Yeah, just to give you that refreshing burst of flavor.
Right, there you go. It's interesting, during that movie Super Size Me, when the person was going on the McDonald's diet for a month, he mentioned a sensation of becoming addicted to it. And one, you know, you wonder if they don't put things in their food to make us desire them more.
Or if they manipulate the thing, that I don't think they're putting anything additional in to make us get hooked on it, but there are certain things that human, you know, I mentioned earlier the fact that we are living longer lives, but we still have Stone Age physiologies.
Yeah, we could live.
And
long.
We crave fat because.
Like sugar.
Fats and sugars were the least available things in the hunter-gatherer diet. You know, I mean, if you think about it, you chase down a deer, you kill the deer, you eat the deer, no fat.
Yeah.
You know, you get a little bit of sugar out of fruits. I mean, the reason the human body will not store vitamin C is because vitamin C was readily available when we were in the trees. Reach over and have a lemon.
Yeah.
I mean, that's oversimplifying, but there's some truth in that. And what they do is they prey upon it. And then, you know, then there's the discussion about things like high fructose corn syrup. I'm so serious about that stuff that I've actually sat down and talked to my kids, but I've actually shown my kids labels in the grocery store. I'm trying to turn them into label readers.
Good.
And I said, you know, this, whenever you see these words, high fructose corn syrup, know that you are dealing with garbage that is bad for your body. It'll roast your aisles of Langerhans. It'll screw up your insulin production.
because it, more and more evidence is pointing toward this stuff as almost a sole cause of the rapid increase in the diabetic population in this country.
Yep, that's right. And that's great that you're talking to your kids about that stuff. I mean...
Yeah, they think I'm a geek, Preston.
Yeah, yeah, but still.
But that's my job. I'm dad. I've got to work the geek factor.
Yeah, and it's activism. You know, it's the most important kind of activism.
And that's kind of what chapped me when I had that story last night about Walmart and the country of origin labeling. Can you imagine that as American citizens, we don't even have the right to know where the turkey came from we're going to put on the table tomorrow? We're just left to assume that it came from some happy little industrial turkey Auschwitz somewhere in mid-America?
Right. I mean, free markets. They're always talking about free markets, but if there were such a thing, it would involve that sort of information.
Well, Preston, if I can't make an informed decision about the stuff I'm buying, I'm not participating in a free market because I am not a free purchaser.
Exactly. Exactly. We're not being given the information to make our choices, informed choices. It's a real shame. Actually, I was just listening to a story on Democracy Now! About these crucifixes that were being made in some horrendous sweatshop.
Oh, I've got the story in my stack right now.
Okay.
And it was one of those things. Sometimes I run across stories, Preston, that I think, oh, man, this has got to make it to the show. But then, you know, I read further, and I usually give things, you know, two or three or four reads just to sort of let them get down into the cellular level in my soul.
Yeah.
And I've read it like six times, and I get a little bit madder every time, to the point that I'm afraid that if I bring the story up, I'm just going to wind up sputtering at the microphone. Yes, crucifixes, you know, with the bloody Jesus hanging on it, you know. Granted, he gets a loincloth, because we can't imagine a naked Savior, even though everybody was crucified naked. The Romans weren't nearly so squeamish as we are. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of these things manufactured in sweatshops in China, where people work 15 hours a day making Jesus for
yep.
pennies on the hour.
Yep. And not only were they not sharing place of origin information, they were deceiving people about it. They put made in Italy on some of them anyway. And the Charles Carnegie, this incredible sweatshop, anti-sweatshop crusader, talked about how they're selling them like the crazy Eddie have crucifixes. You know, we will not be undersold. All these crosses must go. And
I must be crazy for selling crucifixes this cheap.
Exactly. But anyway, thankfully they were busted by Charles Kernighan, and you know, they're scrambling.
And I don't want to take anything away from what Mr. Carnegie has done, and I'm not. But am I overly pessimistic, Preston, when I suspect that for every one of these that get busted, there's a dozen out there that aren't?
It's a huge problem, for sure. Were these being made in, was it Vietnam or was it China?
China. You know? The story I've got says China.
Okay. Well, yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure there are more in Vietnam and in Haiti and... Yeah.
And what I hate is the fact that I know that there's a fundamentalist out there somewhere, Preston, who is saying, well, maybe they're gonna come to understand the saving grace of Jesus Christ by working in that sweatshop.
They'll say that. They'll also say, well, at least we're giving them jobs. They had nothing before. You know, I mean, we're so ignorant of other cultures and
We don't bother to ask things like, I mean, we just assume that, you know, oh, look, they got a couple of billion people in China. And, you know, we make assumptions, and they're really, really bigoted assumptions, Preston. Things like, well, you know, they were just sitting around till we brought the industry over. No, they weren't. They were, in fact, peasant farmers, what we'd call in the Deep South dirt farmers, subsistence farmers,